This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network or affiliated with Donald Sterling. I am the godfather, Nate Milton. What's going on, fellas? Missed you last week.
What's going on, man? Good to be back.
What's up, man?
Yeah, last week I took control of the wheel and flew the show solo, but all three Kings are back this week, and what a week we have. First of all, I just want to say thank you, Adam Silver, for removing a black cloud, and I sense the irony in that statement, a black cloud from the National Basketball Association, and I think that's where we have to start this week, Marcus, because that's been pretty much the topic of conversation for everyone in the world of sports and outside the world of sports for the last week or so.
Yeah, so when we did the show, or when you did the show last week, the tape had just come out, and I don't think we understood how serious the ramifications were going to be. And this story took off Sunday, and I believe that was Sunday when Silver was at the Memphis Oklahoma City game, and he said, there would be an investigation, and they would have a decision sooner than later. And by Tuesday, he had a decision, and he decided to ban Donald Sterling from the NBA. And they assessed him a fine of $2.5 million, which is the max you can fine an owner, according to the NBA bylaws. And he's gone. The problem now is that, there's another step. The owners have to now vote to strip Donald Sterling of his ownership. But Sterling is not in any rush to sell the team. And, he can, I expect him to get a lawyer and fight this because it's, while I understand what Adam Silver did, at the same time, how do you strip someone of ownership?
For now, I'm just glad there was swift action taken. I know that there's a lot of questions of why, who, what, but we live in an era right now where you really should shoot first, ask questions later in a situation like this, in this sensitive situation, because so many stories, I don't care how big a story seems in the moment, every single story is susceptible to just fall outside the 24-hour news cycle. And this story going away, nothing happening, would be the same as something happening and Donald Sterling getting evicted from his NBA franchise, so to speak, in a quick process. Because once something else, once another mall opens up or LeBron melts down the playoffs or something happens, then everybody's talking about that. So I'm glad that this has happened. I know that there's going to be some legal ramifications, but as far as we're concerned, I think he's doing the right thing. It was funny because I was in Santa Barbara when this all went down. I was at alumni weekend. We had limited access to television. We really just hang out with the alumni the entire weekend. And my friend just kind of nudges me. He's got his phone out. He's like, dude, did you just hear what came out, what Donald Sterling had said? And without any preconceived notions of what had happened, I said, what? Did he say all the black people need to go to Africa? What's new? Donald Sterling said, that was pretty close to what he had actually said. It was terrible, it was racist, but it was no surprise, and I carried on with my day and my weekend. And, as the days went on, obviously this got bigger. But again, like a lot of people have said, this is no surprise that Donald Sterling is an ugly racist. The only news is that now he doesn't have a franchise.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that was long overdue. If you knew anything about the history of Donald Sterling, and I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I believe he wrote a piece for Time Magazine,
yes,
that really got into the details and the property that Donald Sterling owns and kind of the unfair conditions that he's put upon minorities. And so this is something that is long overdue. This is something that needed to happen. I guess now it's just a matter of making sure that this team gets sold and making sure that none of the vestiges of the Sterling era are a part of this franchise moving forward, and that includes Shelly Sterling, who, you know, as I mentioned last week, has a stake in this team.
Yeah, she's someone who has been interesting to watch because, you know, during the game Sunday, Clippers, Golden State, there's a sideline report where Shelly released a statement through Lisa Salters basically saying, you know, we don't condone what Donald said. And later that night, TMZ caught them both out at dinner, and it looked like Shelly was defending Donald and trying to get him into the car. So it's like she's talking from both sides. And if you do some more research on Shelly Sterling, you'll see that she, you know, she's well aware of what was happening with her husband and what her husband was about and what he stands for. And, you know, that whole divorce thing is a sham, you know, for them to still be married and you know, the whole mistress thing. Yeah. While they might have this lawsuit that, you know, she's trying to recoup all these gifts and money that this woman got, she's still with the man. So the fact that she showed up to the game on Tuesday night, I was bothered by. I don't think she should be around the team, and I'm hoping, you know, going forward that the Clippers front office will put an end to that.
Yeah, and these the reports that Marcus is talking about, I mean, they've even shown Shelly a light to where she's facilitating this ugly behavior by Donald Sterling, in that she would go door to door and just with the intention of seeing what race a person was when they were there to kind of take a private poll, but she would disguise it as like a census or something like that. And just the name Sterling, the fact that her last name is Sterling, she's already fighting an uphill battle, but the fact that now there's a perception out there that she's still in Donald Sterling, it just makes it even, I think, more impossible for her to come out of this with any type of ownership of the team or to be absolved of Donald Sterling.
Yeah, at worst, she is as racist as Donald Sterling, but at best, she's an enabler. So either way you cut it, you know, she cannot be a part of the solution going forward.
The one person I feel sorry for is Donald Sterling's son-in-law, who works in the Clippers organization and who was sort of being groomed to, you know, take over the team. And he's come out and he's ripped Donald Sterling since this stuff's gone down. But, you know, any shot of him sort of moving up, he's the Clippers director of basketball operations, but any chance of him moving up into that ownership spot, I mean, I can't see the NBA allowing another person associated with the Sterlings buying this team. So I'm sure, you know, it's a matter of time before he's gone from the organization.
Do you see him getting a job anywhere else, though? Because
I mean,
if he's good at his job and he just happens to share the last name with this ignorant person, you know, I think that, what is it, the sins of the father, you know, they necessarily shouldn't impact this guy's chance of earning a living.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't see him, you know, getting blackballed or anything like that. But at the same time, if you know, if you really want to, you know, clean house of all the Sterlings, the D might have to go, which is unfortunate, but it's just one of those things that, you know, that's how it plays out. And you mentioned earlier about the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar thing. I would check out Bomani Jones' interview he did on Dan Le Batard's show on, I want to say, Monday, I believe. And, you know, he had a really strong opinion about the whole Sterling situation. He was someone who wrote about Sterling and the housing discrimination way back in 2006, I believe, when he was living in California. And, you know, he's someone who's, you know, been out there in the story, and finally, you know, people are starting to come around. And that's, you know, that's part of the issue I had with the story is, you know, living in L.A., we've heard about Donald Sterling. We've knew about the whole Black History Month in March thing, and people in the national media didn't pick up on it. And in part, the Clippers weren't relevant. The Clippers haven't been relevant since Chris Paul and Blake Griffin got here. And now that all of a sudden there's this outcry about Donald Sterling, it's kind of funny and laughable. Granted, I'm happy that Adam Silver did what he did, but at the same time, you know, this is nothing new with this guy, and it's been long overdue.
Yeah, Sterling is kind of a fascinating individual. You mentioned the discrimination with the housing thing. You mentioned just the ignorance and the hatred that he showed on that phone call. But he's also somebody that has been honored by the NAACP out there in California.
Yeah.
And it's like this weird...
Well, that's just more about the NAACP than him.
Perhaps, but I also think that there is something that it's almost like sort of a real Southern sensibility. And I think it's something that maybe doesn't play on the coast as much, but it's something that if you spend any good amount of time in the South, you know people just like Donald Sterling. They go to your churches. They give to charities. They're very generous outwardly, but at the same time, they hold these antiquated opinions of race relations on the inside. And so to me, when I see Donald Sterling, like I said last week, it wasn't something that shocked me. It was just like, oh, he was somebody that I could have seen in Mississippi or Carolina or here in Virginia. It just seems like when it happens in a town like L.A., for those that haven't been paying attention, it's like, oh, wow, this is ridiculous. This is crazy. But no, this is somebody that's had these opinions and these feelings all along.
I was just going to say, what do you guys make of Donald, the issue that people are bringing up, which is valid, but I'll withhold my opinion for now, that there's a privacy issue, that Donald Sterling's privacy was breached, and that's how this all came about, and that's not right. What do you guys make of that issue?
See, the problem is, like, look, all right, say if this was Mark Cuban, and say if these comments were tied to Mark Cuban, I don't feel Silver would have acted as swiftly with Cuban, but considering Sterling's history, I mean, he was already on two strikes as it is, so it didn't take much for Silver to do what he did. I do feel like the other 29 Otis would get the benefit of the doubt a little more if this was associated with them. And I think more people would have said, hey, you know, I mean, technically, well, it wasn't a phone call, but I know phone calls in California, both sides have to be notified that there's a recording going on. This was all recorded at Sterling's suggestion because he had problems remembering stuff, supposedly. So he was setting himself up for what happened. But, yeah, I mean, I would understand why people would say, well, this is a private conversation. Why should this impact his, you know, his work, especially since he's owner? But at the same time, I mean, this dude had no, he was already on thin ice as it is. And anything, it could have been a lot less than what these tapes turned out to be to get this guy out of the front office, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and then the other thing, like, I'm all for, you know, people being able to have private conversations. They stay private. But I don't think that privacy extends to the side chick. I think when you got a side chick and you're as high profile an individual as Donald Sterling is, it's like you always got to watch your own back. And so I don't have any sympathy for, you know, these tapes getting out. Like Marcus said, he had trouble remembering things. So when you're documenting all this stuff and you're having problems with the side chick and you're beefing with the side chick, you may want to get rid of those tapes before you break up with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to protect yourself if you're Donald Sterling in that situation.
And I'll do you one better, Nate, in saying that privacy doesn't extend to anybody anymore. Every moment that allegedly isn't being recorded, or isn't, you know, I don't want to sound like Black Helicopter Guy, but every moment that you feel is not being recorded, you should cherish. Because that is an exception, not only with Facebook and Twitter and social media, but with, you know, we've heard of rumblings with the NSA and stuff like that. Every moment that's not being recorded, you should cherish. And if you're being recorded, whether it be illegally or legally, doing something wrong, what you the forefront, not the fact that you were recorded illegally. So right. The fact that it got out is all that matters to me.
Like stealing liquor from the bar at the Lutzar?
That was probably, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Was that recorded or not?
That probably was recorded. You just don't know about it.
I didn't hear about it, so I have to move on like it wasn't. Or the guy on that tape has to move on like it wasn't.
Yeah.
Was that a Black helicopter that just went by?
It was. I believe it was.
It's coming.
They're all over the place, man. You don't see them?
That's where Bean Dart plays to your advantage, Alfred. They probably couldn't recognize you. What is that black spot doing back there?
Why is the night stealing liquor? Why is the darkness stealing liquor? But real quick, let's spin it forward. There's been rumblings and grumblings about potential new owners for the Clippers. Who do you think would be a great fit? I know you guys live out there in L.A. Who do you think would be a great fit, not only from a PR standpoint, but from a community standpoint?
Magic.
See, I think, but I don't know if, like, he's a Laker.
He's a Laker.
Yeah, but...
Well, yeah, is he a Laker after this week? I don't know. We'll get into that in a minute, but...
I mean, looking at how the Guggenheim group really handled the Dodgers is just such a swift transition, going from a stadium that couldn't draw anybody because people were scared of going to the games, which is really the worst type of non-popularity to have, is if people are scared to go to the games, it's very hard to bring them back. But they brought them back, and they've got this team contending. So I wouldn't have a problem with Magic. I would like to see Oprah on a team. I've always been pro Oprah, and I, you know, Oprah and that group, Larry Ellison and them. I think that would be a good match.
I would love Oprah as a team owner, but only if, and I guess what's the group she's got with David Geffen and
Larry Ellison.
Yeah,
was that it?
Yeah,
but I would love it if she took her own people and plugged them into positions in the organization. Like Dr. Phil as the GM.
Gail King as the host.
As the coach. Stedman as the director of basketball operations.
Stedman would be the water boy. He would get everybody water.
Stedman, Graham, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for writing a book talking about how to be successful in business. Chapter 1, Marry Oprah, end of the book.
Yeah. They should have called it He Got Game.
Not even Marry Oprah, just shack up with Oprah. But I could see Oprah, but Magic would be intriguing. I know Floyd Mayweather threw his name in the hat, but I don't think that's going to happen. Do you see somebody
Frankie Muniz has thrown his name in the hat?
Oh, Malcolm in the Middle,
yep.
As the owner of the L.A. Clippers. And he was one of the first fans to really get on that Clipper bandwagon back in the day.
He was.
I remember you could go and it was like Malcolm, Frankie Muniz, and Penny Marshall were like the only stars the Clippers had.
Billy Crystal, yeah. And Clipper Darryl, of course.
And Clipper Darryl. Clipper Darryl should be part of an ownership group.
Yeah, no. Sorry, Clipper Darryl. Love you, Darryl, but no.
Well, whoever is the new owner, I think they should officially make Clipper Darryl a part of the organization.
Yes, I do agree with that.
So let's spin it forward to Magic Johnson. You mentioned Magic a little while ago, Marcus. And Donald Sterling is on the way out in L.A., and he may have some company on that train.
No, he does have some company on the train.
Mike Anthony, the coach of the Lakers, or former coach of the Lakers, Mike Anthony.
Tell us why there's Anthony and not D'Antoni.
Because there's no D with Coach D'Antoni.
Why do you encourage these jokes, Alfred? I was going to just ignore this stick and set up and just move on.
I love it.
But Mike D'Antoni dismissed and
He resigned. He didn't get fired.
Well, it was one of those resign or we gonna fire you type of deals. I believe.
I mean, they weren't gonna. I don't think they're gonna fire him because Kupchak already came out in his defense and supported him a couple weeks ago. And then
isn't that always the kiss of death though?
That's what you see in the NFL. I want to say no. This is my quarterback, and 2 weeks later, you got Matt Leinart, under center or something like that.
The aforementioned L.A. legend, Urban Magic Johnson, was not, he wasn't sad at all about this development, was he, Marcus?
No, he tweeted out shortly after the news broke on Tuesday, "Happy days are here again. Mike D'Antoni resigns as a Lakers coach. I couldn't be happier."
Hashtag shots fired.
And people got on Magic's case for this. People were really upset that Magic was so vocal about D'Antoni resigning.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was upset. I was kind of amused by the whole thing, but it rubbed me the wrong way, only that it came from Magic. Like, I was watching the scroll on NBA TV, and it was all the tweets coming in about Donald Sterling, and then this somehow just popped up. He said, "Happy days are here again," and I'm just assuming that he's talking about Donald Sterling being gone. And when I saw the stuff about Mike D'Antoni, I had to double check, and I just kind of thought to myself, did they verify that came from Magic's account? That's kind of a lowbrow thing to say, but it in fact was Magic, and it just doesn't strike me as maybe he would think about that privately, and he has been open about how he doesn't think that D'Antoni's a very good coach, but for him to just go out in public and stoop to that level really shocked me.
I mean, it wasn't like D'Antoni was fired. It'd be different if D'Antoni got fired and, we're taking money out of his you know, from family and stuff. But the dude resigned. He's still getting paid, partially because of part of this agreement they came up with. So, I mean, yeah, it's Magic Johnson, and Magic's supposed to do no wrong. He's supposed to say all the right things. But for anyone who had to sit through those later games this year, I completely understand why you're happy about D'Antoni leaving. So.
Yeah, celebrate a man's departure and, like, name him by name. Like, he could have at least put this in a veiled shot and said, you know, the Lakers will be much better off now. And I think even then people would have given him a pass. But to just go at the man, like, what time was this posted? Was he drunk?
6:56
We had a box of wine.
Not only that,
just went Kevin Cash.
No apology. He didn't delete the tweet.
No!
Tweet through it, Magic. Tweet through it. Just so drawn.
See, to me, I think this is still some of the residual effects from the Donald Sterling fiasco. Because I think Magic felt some type of way, and all his people was like, hey, come on, Irvin. You gotta take a high road on this, Irvin. And Magic didn't say anything. You really didn't hear anything out of Magic when that whole thing was going down. But I think...
Yeah, you did. He was on TV Sunday morning. What are you talking about?
He wasn't going hard at Sterling.
Well, no, he's smarter than that. I mean, what more is... I mean, what is there to say? Especially
this
considering...
Time, Magic, 6:56 p.m., Magic probably sitting home watching the Aspire Network, that great television network
he's
out there in
LA. Dodgers.
And he got hyped, and he was like, you know what? I'm waiting to say this whole time. Cookie, give me the laptop. And Magic was tapping, and he didn't listen to Herm Edwards and wait to push send. He pushed send, and then, like I said, I don't think it's a big deal. I just think maybe it's something. It's almost beneath Magic to make a comment like that. It may be true, but it's somebody else should have said it other than Magic.
But come on, we're talking about a guy who got paid up until this year to give his opinion on basketball on TV. What would be different if Magic was on TV saying the same thing?
The fact that he was on TV saying the same thing. Twitter has a very visceral, angry, trolling nature to it. It's like, when you talk about Twitter and people commenting and taking shots on Twitter, it always kind of lowers somebody. I think whenever I hear a Twitter beef and stuff like that, it always kind of lowers people. Magic is above that. It's above Twitter. If you want to have an opinion, not any of us can just go on ESPN and talk. That's what makes him Magic. That's what makes him better than us in that realm, is that he can call up his agent and say, I want to go on ESPN and talk. Then that's a different light. But the fact that he would just log on a laptop with the rest of the bottom 5% who would, you know, was probably wishing the same thing, that makes it different.
Yeah, if Chris in L.A. tweets this, that's one thing. But if Magic does it, it's a whole different thing. Shout out to Chris in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got no ties to the Lakers at the moment. He's sold his ownership group. He's just a basketball fan at this point who happens to have his jersey retired to Staples Center. And a statue.
Is
this a slow burning heel turn for Magic? Like, it's this, and then it's like he shows up and he joins a Clippers. Like, do you think this is going to be like a Titus turning? Magic's going to be
I mean, I think this is a bus rebellion. I mean, he's tweeted equally negative things during the season about the Buss family. That didn't really catch on, but, you know, he rips D'Antoni, a guy who deserved to be gone, and all of a sudden people stop to care. But some of the stuff he's tweeting about the Buss family, remember he gave himself, like, a moratorium on Twitter about the Lakers? He stopped tweeting about them because he got all riled up and was just tweeting all kinds of shit. So, yeah, I mean, I could totally understand. If he wanted to stick it to the Lakers, I would buy the Clippers and go all in and stick it to the Buss family, because the Laker organization has not been the same since Dr. Jerry Buss has passed away. And, you know, maybe it's time for him to move on, and he'll always be Laker for life. I think he'll always have the respect of Laker fans. But, you know, if he wanted to, you know, really be serious about buying an NBA team, why not buy a team where you live?
Yeah, and I mean, that would truly cement his legacy in L.A. as the guy that kind of, I won't go as far as to say resurrected, but the guy that really uplifted two franchises with the Dodgers and perhaps with the Clippers. I mean, that would be like a huge feather in Magic's cap.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Guggenheimen, I mean, Magic, in terms of the Dodger ownership, we're talking about a small percentage, but he's been
the face. He's the front man.
He's the ambassador.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, when we're talking $2 billion, we're talking, Magic's portion, we're talking about millions compared to $2 billion. Granted, he's at Dodger games more often than I thought he would be. He's there pretty often, sitting there behind home plate, He's sort of been the face of the team when it comes to the front office. So I do give him credit for that. But
yeah, I mean, Magic has essentially become the Tommy Lasorda for the new millennium. Because as a kid, when I saw anything dealing with the Dodgers, before I thought of any player, I thought of Tommy Lasorda because he was always around. And I think for kids growing up now with this new interest in the Dodgers, they're going to think of Magic probably before any of the other players, except for maybe Puig.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
If Puig hasn't disappeared by then.
Oh.
Mm. We're not going to get into Puig this week. We'll say that for next week.
We already talked about him.
I'm sure Puig will tell the story next week. I mean, he's a heat magnet. So, but what other story besides that, real quick? What is kind of the most intriguing storyline outside of the Pacers in the postseason to you guys right now?
I guess Miami and just sort of no one has discussed them. They sort of did their job. They swept. Now they're just waiting around, and I'm sure they're enjoying the extra time off, especially Dwayne Wade. But for everything that went on with the Clippers and with Indiana and Oklahoma City, that no one's really talked about Miami. It doesn't, you know, it helps that they're playing Charlotte, but just sort of Miami's sort of not in the forefront at the moment.
By the way, I think we do, even though they were swept, I think you do got to give a tip of the cap to the Bobcats, because very quietly, as much as MJ and his regime over there has kind of been a joke the past few seasons, they're quietly putting together a team with some nice pieces.
And you know what? They gave the Miami Heat a run, and I will go on a limb and say that the fact that Michael Jordan showed up to that game, I think, was the day that the music died for the Charlotte Bobcats, because the Bobcats were hanging in right there with the Heat, and when Michael Jordan sat in that building, that motivated LeBron James more than anybody else in the building, more than any of those young players who had to be ushered off on an airplane because the coach was afraid of them succumbing to the temptations of South Beach. That motivated LeBron James, as you saw when he stared down Michael Jordan. So when that happened, then Heat went into beast mode, and you know LeBron James said, I'm not going to lose in front of this goat.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a different series if Al Jefferson was healthy. That was, you know, that he got hurt game one was just a big blow, and he finally had to sit out game four. But yeah, you know, when you didn't stare down on dunks, I'm sure that's maybe you should move your seat up to the box where you're not in a visible sight line of LeBron James.
Oh, I wish MJ would have just suited up for one quarter.
So much for our theory about the Charlotte being so bad that he would come back and play against Chicago to end the series. I'm glad I didn't buy those tickets. Sounded great on paper.
Yeah, it did. It was a good idea. But, Maybe next year. I still hold out hope that we'll get one last game.
Because they're
going to be the Hornets next season. So maybe the first game at the home arena, MJ will suit up for the Hornets.
Well, I mean, 50 is a new thing. You got Hopkins turning 50 soon, winning titles. We got Jordan, who's 50 now for... Oh, he's 51 now. Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know.
I think there's a better chance we get LeBron versus Jordan one-on-one on pay-per-view than Jordan come back to play a game.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No. Neither is going to happen. But I would pay to see LeBron and Jordan.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But LeBron, chilling at home watching the playoffs like the rest of us, waiting to see who he will face next, and I'm sure that whatever happens, all of us will be intrigued. This is a wild, crazy postseason, and you know, not just off the court, on the court, but off the court as well. And you know, again, thank you, Adam Silver. Big up to you, my brother. I think he's going I think Charles Barkley was the one who said it on Inside the NBA. He was like, that decision was kind of the moment when Adam Silver officially became the commissioner. Like, that is the kind of the start of his legacy and separating himself from David Stern.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of David Stern, we haven't heard a peep from David Stern since any of this has gone down. So
I think that's by design, too.
Yeah.
He realizes how big a moment this is for Adam Silver. He's going to take it away.
But I also think, you know, that's one part. If Stern opens his mouth, knowing what we know about or what the mainstream now knows about Donald Sterling and how long this has been going on, I think it opens up Stern to some questions.
Yeah, it does.
Absolutely. And people are already asking questions about, you know, if we knew about this stuff, you know, Stern knew about this stuff.
Stern knew about everybody. I mean, he was concerned with the way Allen Iverson dressed getting off of a plane. You know, he was so such a micromanager when it came to the NBA that you know he had to know everything that was going on with Donald Stern.
Oh, he's well aware. Yeah. But, I mean, there's probably a certain portion of loyalty for the guy. I mean, he's the longest tenured owner in the NBA, and he's been there the entire Stern era.
And he was a bad owner too. Like, not even talking about the racist part. Let's ignore the racist part. He was a terrible owner for a lot of years.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't like the Clippers weren't making money for him. So
that's why he was a bad owner, though. The minute that they had the chance to be good, he would have to pay those players. He would ship them out. He did not care about winning. Usually, the most profitable franchises, just like the Houston Astros and the MLB, are the ones that lose over and over and have a very low payroll.
It's funny, like, we came full circle. We started with Donald Sterling, and we ended with Donald Sterling. And in a perfect world, this would be the last we ever talk about Donald Sterling, but I have a feeling he'll come up from time to time.
Yeah, this isn't done yet. He's on a fight this, I'm pretty sure. And, I mean, it won't be over until he's dead, whenever that is, so.
I was going to say, he's got a lifetime ban, but I don't know how long that's gonna last.
Yeah.
It could be 10 years, it could be 10 minutes, you never know. Not that I'm wishing death upon anybody.
Hey, you said it.
I'm not Big Nasty getting people fired. Oh, well, that's NBA block, and Marcus and I are going to come back and talk about some more headlines from the world of sports, and I think Alfred... I see a black helicopter heading over your hood. You may want to duck out for a bit.
I'm going to disappear and hang out with you, feel free.
Just disappear like a black shadow. Why is the shadow stealing our liquor? More Kings of Sport right after this.
Hey everybody, you remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do too. My name's Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's Cospod on Twitter. Let's go.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport. Nate and Marcus holding things down. We had to give Big Nasty a break. It's not a Donald Sterling thing. We don't have problems with black Africans on our podcast. But we wanted him to get ready for the ringside rap because that is going to be a ridiculous conversation about extreme rules. And so I think you know, we're going to give him a break and we're going to get into some hockey because I know that last week, you were sitting by your computer or listening to your iPod or your iPhone or whatever, and you were riveted by the conversation that me and Brother Bill from Mr. Throwback Thursday had, weren't you, Marcus?
I was. It was an interesting conversation. I'm glad you guys discussed hockey. The only problem, though, is Bill's picks seemed to be all kind of haunted up there. I think everything Bill predicted went the opposite direction, including my Los Angeles Kings, damn it.
Oh, yeah, I figured you had something to say about that. Now, the kind of traditional hacky question that every sportscaster asks is, did the Sharks choke it, or did the Kings win it? When in reality, the answer is probably a combination of both. But where do you come down on the series as a whole, Marcus?
It's tough to say because, you know, Jonathan Quick was so bad those first three games when San Jose jumped out and took that lead that, that was the reason why the Kings were struggling. The offense was there, but the goaltending, I mean, they were number one in the regular season in goaltending, and Quick just laid an eight those first three games. So I would say the Kings won it just because Quick turned it around. I mean, but this is what San Jose does. I mean, this is what their thing is. They do great in the regular season, and the first round of playoffs come about, and they just choke. So, I mean, I'm really shocked their head coach hasn't been fired yet, because for them to become only the fourth team in NHL history to blow a 3-0 lead like this, I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I think, we'll get to some of the other matchups here in a second, but you mentioned you were surprised that the coach hadn't been fired. There was a dismissal earlier today, somebody we've talked about on this very program, and maybe the only hockey coach that I actually was entertained and intrigued by.
You talking about Torts?
Talking about Torts.
Yeah. Yeah, Vancouver was one of those teams that was sort of like San Jose. They were a great regular season squad, and when the playoffs came around, they would run into a wall, and this season, they didn't even get a chance to run into that wall because they didn't make the playoffs. Their offense stunk. They finished near the bottom of the Pacific Division. And John Tortorella, who was in his first year in Vancouver, got canned after getting canned the previous year from New York. So, I feel bad for him, but at the same time, for you to take a franchise that was doing so well and to not make the playoffs the following year, it's hard to justify that, especially in Canada. They love their hockey in Canada. You can't come in and go the other direction. So yeah, Torch got the boot.
And to me, what was it? He had a 5-year contract, and he only made it through that first year. So the team, you think would have to hit him up with that cash, just financially, from a financial standpoint. Do you think that they should have gave him at least one more year to see if he really worked out?
Oh, I don't know why they hired him in the first place. And just knowing his personality and sort of the way he interacts with the media, and I'm sure, the incident this year with Calgary, I believe, didn't help his cause. So they're really taking a risk hiring this guy in the first place. And, he's going to get paid. I'm assuming that he's going to have to get at least partial payment for the final 4 years on his contract if he didn't negotiate a buyout or some sort like that. But they took a risk, it backfired, and I do wonder if he'll be coaching next year in the NHL.
I think somebody will give him a look. I mean, he was 36 and 35 this season, which isn't great, but I mean, there's so many bottom feeder teams, and if you're a bottom feeder team, why not take a chance on a coach that'll at least get you some press?
Well, I mean, Do you want the negative press? I mean, you don't. He's not.
You're a journalist, Marcus. Well, what's the old saying? Any press is good press.
Not when you're getting suspended without pay during the regular season. No, that's not what you want for a franchise. But you never know. There are some bad teams in the NHL, and I think they would have been. Well, no, they would have missed the playoffs in the Eastern Conference too with that record. So, yeah, I mean, He might get another look. It wouldn't surprise me. But to go to his third team in 3 years is pretty rare for a head coach in any league.
Yeah, maybe the best case scenario would be if the mothership gave him a call, and then you could get Barry Melrose and Torts doing hockey segments.
That'd be interesting.
Well, let's get back to the playoffs. As you mentioned, the conference semifinals about to kick off. We got Boston and Montreal, Pittsburgh and Brother Bill's New York Rangers, Minnesota and Chicago, I almost said Chicago, I don't know where that came from, and Anaheim and the Kings. So which of those series is the most intriguing to you, and do you see any, I don't know, at this stage of the game, are there really upsets in the conference semis?
No. Well, Minnesota getting past Chicago would be an upset. I think that's probably the only one that would be that would stand out. The rest, I mean, the way the playoffs are structured now, it's structured like this is to keep it competitive. But that Minnesota, if they made the Western Conference Finals, that would be an upset. So, of course, the series I'm interested in, and I'm going to be a total homer here, is Anaheim and Los Angeles, and only because
I was just going to say, do you work at the Springfield Nuclear Power Plant because you're coming off like a homer, man.
I know. Well, this is the reason why we just. It's the first time in the playoffs that these two teams have faced off against each other. And, you know, the Ducks have been in the NHL for 20-plus years now. Both teams have won Stanley Cups, and this is the first time they've actually met in the playoffs. So, in terms of a rivalry aspect, this is big for people in Southern California who like hockey. I know the national hockey audience could probably care less about the Kings or the Ducks, but I'm interested in that. And I do want to see what happens with Rangers-Penguins. Pittsburgh, despite Marc-Andre Fleury trying to blow the series, advanced, and New York almost choked off another series, but they got past Philadelphia. So I'm curious to see if Sidney Crosby will actually show up to the playoffs this year, if he's going to actually make an impact in the series. And it both these, speaking of rivalries, I mean, both these teams don't like each other, so it should be a good series out east.
And Boston-Montreal is intriguing to me as well, just yes. Because – you know, the lone Canadian team left in the postseason against a Boston team that I picked last week to make it to the Stanley Cup final. So I think that'll be an intriguing matchup. Getting back to the Ducks and the Kings, I mean, I mentioned last week to Bill just kind of the resurgence over the last five or six seasons in California hockey.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen a interest in hockey on that side of the Mississippi since Gordon Bombay led a scrappy Ducks team. Back in the day, but
well, I mean, the Ducks have won since then. They've won the cup.
It ain't been the same since Emilio left, though.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that discussion. It's been interesting. Well, first off, there's actually been a lot more hockey players coming from Southern California, which has been interesting to watch because
is that just a cultural thing? Like, have the soccer moms turned into hockey moms?
Not on that level yet. I still think soccer is king for that type of stuff. I still think baseball's up there. Hockey's not at that level yet where you're seeing, or at least I'm not seeing kids 5, 6, 7 signing up for hockey, but they are producing more hockey players, which is tough because, you know, we don't actually have high schools, or at least a lot of them, that have hockey here. So you have to play mostly club league and go out of your way to get well enough to get drafted. So in terms of the local teams plus San Jose, yeah, I mean, this was a great year for all three teams in regular season. The Kings and the Ducks have now been in the playoffs at least 3 or 4 years. I think Anaheim fell off 1 year, but at least 3 or 4 years now, both teams have been in the playoffs. So, yeah, hockey, I mean, while it's not a big deal yet out here for the average sports fan, it's good to see that both teams are playing well, and I think hopefully the series will bring some good exposure to the sport of hockey in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I agree, especially, you know, with all the available media outlets out there. I think, you know, you could get some sort of mini boom for hockey out there. But let's go to the picks right quick. We didn't have a chance to get your opinions on the series since you weren't here last week. But we'll start in the East, where I have Boston and New York advancing, and then Boston heading to the Stanley Cup Finals. What are your picks out there?
I'm going with Boston over Montreal, two of the original six teams. I'm going with the Rangers over the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then out west, I'm going with Chicago and I'm going to go Kings. Hockey is that weird sport where once you start getting on a roll.
You know you're going with the Kings.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Kings. Only because Twitch is playing so well. And the last time Twitch played this well in the playoffs, well, they won the Stanley Cup. So I'm going Kings-Chicago in a rematch in the Western Conference Finals. And then for the Stanley Cup predictions, I'm going to go Chicago again and Boston. Chicago-Boston with Chicago repeating.
That's not a bad pick. I think last week I had Boston and San Jose with Boston winning. So one of those outcomes is not going to happen.
Yeah, you seem enamored with the black hockey players last week. There's more than two. I know Bill only mentioned two of them, but they're still got. Anaheim has two guys who are black. Montreal, PK Subban is black on Montreal. So there's a few guys left. The Kings don't have anyone left because Wayne Simmonds got traded a couple years ago. But
yeah, Bill was pretty high on Wayne Simmonds.
Oh, I have a Wayne Simmonds jersey in my closet from when he was on the Kings. Great player. He actually had a hat trick in Game 6 for Philadelphia. So
yeah, Jamie had posted something. Jamie from Throwback Thursday on I think the Kings of Sport Facebook page, facebook.com/ the Kings of Sport, and he was like, there's your boy Simmonds, and Bill told you about him. So yes, if you know any and all black hockey players, we are definitely
and then
fans of black hockey players.
On top of that, the Dutch guys, one is from Long Beach, California. Both these guys are 21, by the way. One's from Long Beach and the one's from Scarborough, from Wayshood. So
one's from the LBC and one's from Scarborough.
Yeah, both 21 years old. So
okay. Yeah. Black hockey players. Big ups.
So the one, and the guy from Scarborough, his name is Devante.
Devante.
Like Jodeci.
That's great. Maybe we'll have to holler at Way and see if he can work some backstage channels to get Devante on the Kings of Sport. The Scarborough homeboy. I'm sure he listens to Bray Ting.
Yeah, who doesn't?
But let's go from giving big ups to black hockey players to shaking our head at black boxers. And this is an individual who is a favorite topic of discussion on this program, somebody that we've admired for his skills in the ring and for his bravado outside of the ring. But I don't know what it was, Marcus, but today when I woke up, I had the day off, and I woke up and Twitter in general, but black Twitter especially, was going ham on this particular story.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for Floyd Mayweather. It started off on, I believe, was that Tuesday, where he said he wanted to buy the Clippers. Yesterday or Wednesday during his pre-fight press conference, he had a whole thing at the beginning where he was going to donate money to breast cancer survivors, and he was actually inviting women who had defeated breast cancer to his fight on Saturday. And then on Thursday, he decided to take to Instagram and air out his dirty laundry with his ex-girlfriend, Chantel Jackson, a.k.a. Miss Jackson, if you were watching the HBO 24/7 series. And he posted a photo of Chantel's sonogram of their two twins. And let me find the exact quote here that he wrote on Instagram. "The real reason me and Chantel Christine Jackson broke up was because she got an abortion, and I'm totally against killing babies. She killed our twin babies." And then with a bunch of hashtags, because it's not an Instagram photo without hashtags. So, yeah. Real sensitive subject. He's a real sensitive person, we're finding out, especially when it comes to love. And why he would do this, especially during fight week, is beyond me. But he'll be lucky if he doesn't find himself in a lawsuit, because you're talking about defamation when you're, you know, putting private information like this out there to the world, and then making, you know, comments about killing babies. It's just a bad combination. But you know, whatever shot he had of owning the Clippers probably went out the window today. So,
yeah. So,
you know, not counting the fact that he's already a convicted felon and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So.
And we know how much he loves to gamble, and the NBA is not too keen on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just another disqualifying one.
You can cross him off the list, and that just leaves Oprah.
Come on, Oprah. But, this to me, it's not a good look all the way around. I mean, granted, like you said, Floyd is a sensitive dude, as we're now realizing. But there's something to be said for discretion. There's something to be said for, you know, keeping your mouth shut. And especially with something like this, because it touches on and it sets off, as I mentioned, you know, the explosion that I saw on Twitter today. It sets off so many varying conversations and emotions within people and within people that are normally very rational. And it tends to make them irrational. And I saw a lot of arguments today in terms of, you know, guys saying, you know, what kind of control they should have over women's bodies, and women coming back and saying, you know, that a father should not even have, you don't even have to notify the father if you want to get an abortion, and just a lot of vitriol, a lot of, you know, because that to me, that's a very personal issue and a very dicey issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, of course, a woman's body, you know, that's her domain. But then you get into the what involvement should the father have, if any. It's a lot of stuff that is probably way too nuanced to have a good discussion about on Twitter in 140 characters with people that are already heated. And so, you know, like you said, I don't know what the point of this is, because we all know Floyd's a master of promotion, and I think the deal with the breast cancer survivors, that was really cool, as well as, you know, a great way to gin up interest for the fight. But this, like, maybe he just woke up in a bad mood and she was on his mind, and he decided to go and, you know, he felt some type of way. But it just, from somebody that is normally a smart businessman, it was a pretty dumb move by Floyd.
I mean, you could probably speak to this as someone, you know, we have no problem discussing this. You've been someone who's been open about your love life, and sometimes you tend to do stuff just based on raw emotion. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a way to do it. Like I have no problem, like I did last week, you know, mm-hmm. what I'm saying, letting the folks out there know what went down with me, because like I said on show number 7, you know, there's going to be times where I'll be in a different kind of mood or this or that, and you know, I don't want to fake the funk with the audience, so to speak. You know, if something's going on with me, I'm going to let you know. But by the same token, I think there's a way you can do it and be authentic with your audience, but at the same time, be respectful of the other person. And yeah. I think Floyd crossed the line on this one.
Oh, totally. I mean, he's never really had tact. But at the same time, I think people see Floyd for just being this entertainment sideshow. And, you know, then there's Floyd Mayweather, the person. And I think just like everyone else, he's got feelings. And for whatever reason, though TMZ did have a story later today that said his ex is, I guess, getting close to Nelly. And that might have sparked the reason why he posted the photo. But, you know, I'm not going to say he's going to lose on Saturday. But if he were to lose on Saturday, I think we can look back at what happened today and, you know, not to compare this to the whole Donald Sterling sideshow that went on with the mistress, but, you know, women can really get in your head. And the same way that this woman brought down Donald Sterling, if, you know, the new streak, since Undertaker's is over, if the new streak ended on Saturday, I would say, in part because he's not focused, and he's more focused on his ex. So I'm really curious to see how this will play out in the ring on Saturday. He should win. Marcos Maidana is not someone who should have a shot based on the way Floyd fights, but, you know, you never know. And if your head's not in the game and Marcos has the power to knock him out, then you could be watching, or we could be seeing an upset in the making.
Yeah, but believe me, you preach this to the choir talking about women with the ability to get into your head. I think I have, there's probably about 6 or 7 different females that I need to charge rent.
Dang.
For the space they have in my head and on differing points of the day. But at the same time, you know, this is a guy that needs to be focused. And you know, just talking from a boxing standpoint, you're right. You know, Maidana is not somebody that Floyd should lose to. But if you can get caught slipping, you know, all it takes is one shot. And I think that sometimes people feed on chaos. Sometimes people feed on drama. And Floyd can do that from time to time. But I think this is something that's a little bit more serious than kind of the typical Floyd drama.
Yeah, and or just to go the other way, he could be hyper-focused as a result of being so upset, and it could just
the whole time he's playing Madonna, he's just thinking about Nelly.
Yeah, and maybe to add to see a Mayweather knockout, which would be rare these days outside of that Victor Ortiz fight. But yeah, I mean, it could go either way. So curious to see, and it should be a good card, a lot better undercard than the fight. When was that? The Pacquiao fight was 2 weeks ago now, which had a shit undercard. But you got Amir Khan fighting on undercard, and also Adrian Broner, who's coming off that loss. So, should be worth checking out Saturday.
Yeah, one last thing with Floyd. I know it's kind of just been speculation and it probably won't lead to anything, but do you see a B-Hop Money May matchup actually coming to fruition down the line? Because I think other than the Pacquiao fight, that may be the most lucrative thing out there.
I think there's a lot better chance of this fight happening than Pacquiao at this point. They broke ground on a new arena today in Las Vegas that is opening in 2016. That the MGM Grand Arena is going to stay in Vegas, but this is going to be the new hotbed for boxing. And the reason AMG is building this arena is in part because they're trying to allure a professional team. So once this arena opens in 2016, I could see Floyd Mayweather opening this arena and having this be his final fight. He's got this six-fight contract with Showtime.
I think it could be both guys' final fights because Hopkins would be what?
51.
Yeah, it'd be a cool kind of booking or period to both guys' careers.
Yeah. Hopkins will be 50 in January. So he'll be 51 in 2016. And I believe Floyd has two fights left after this fight. Yes, two fights left after this fight on Saturday. So I could see Floyd, who has mentioned retirement more than once this week, sort of sticking around until this arena opens the arena, and both men end their career in the ring and settle it. I mean, there's no bad blood between the two. Hopkins was at the presser on Wednesday because he's involved with Golden Boy. So they wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't really have to drum up any fate feud. It's just the fact that these are probably two of the greatest fighters in our generation for sure, and both guys knowing that this is their final fight. So yeah, I can see it happening.
And essentially that new arena would kind of be like the house that Floyd built almost.
Yeah,
it would and be. So, you know, just kind of having that be, you know, the first big time fight in there. And again, like you said, both Hopkins and Mayweather could stake the claim to being arguably the best fighter of this generation. And, you know, I think it'd be a really cool dichotomy because, you know, B-Hop is a grinder and he's that guy that's just gritty and he's going to go out there and leave everything in the ring. And Floyd is the artist. He's the, you know, the guy that's out there painting a picture in the ring. So you got those contrasting styles. And as the old cliche goes, styles make fights. So I think that could be, I think I might actually look forward to that more so than Pacquiao.
Yeah, I mean, Pacquiao has... There's nothing Pacquiao's done recently that would convince me that Floyd would not win. While he's won, he hasn't looked impressive in a while. And, you know, you can speculate as to why that might be the reason. But he just hasn't looked himself and hasn't looked the same when he was, you know, knocking dudes out. So he's not the same Pacquiao.
No, not at all. But someone who will always be the same is Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and he will be rejoining us for the Ringside Wrap. So I'm sure we're going to have some extreme discussions, Brother Mark.
And maybe some racial discussions. More racial discussions as well.
I was going to say more. Do we ever stop racial discussions on this program?
Yeah, not at the second one, but yeah, some more.
Yeah, so stick and stay. You got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week.
PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. It's Marcus and Nate holding things down. No Big Nasty. He has not returned. So maybe the black helicopter's got to him. We'll have to check back with him next week. But it is time for the Ringside Wrap. Each and every week we give you our opinions on the latest news and notes from the wild world of professional wrestling. And two big items to discuss this week. First of all, like I alluded to last segment, we're going to get extreme here for a minute, Marcus. And this is what, one of the, is this the first pay-per-view since the DirecTV and the Dish Network decisions?
It is.
So this will be very interesting. Now, the only way that for most of America, unless you got what on demand.
Well, anyone with regular traditional cable can still order this thing. But if you have a satellite dish of any sort, then you're out of luck. So your Time Warner, yeah, your Comcast, etc. Yeah.
Cox. Yep. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that affects the numbers. But let's just talk about the pay-per-view itself. Looks like the main event is not going to be your World Heavyweight Championship match. Of course, they could flip that. But it looks like the angle with the most focus and maybe the most interest has been the Evolution versus the Shield.
Yeah, this has been going on since the day after WrestleMania. And, you know, I think the combination of Daniel Bryan getting married and his father passing away is a reason why he's sort of been put on the back burner in terms of angle, but we've seen the reformation of Evolution. We even had a Ric Flair appearance on Raw this past Monday night, which was awkward and weird.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. And yeah, this should be the main event. I'm curious to see how this match plays out. I do expect Evolution to win in order to sort of continue this feud. And I mean, I would love to see individual matches with all three guys if that's the direction they decide to go. But yeah, I do see Evolution going over.
Yeah, I think that would be the right call, just in terms of prolonging things, because I do think there is a lot of traction left within this thing, and then eventually, at the end of it, with the Shield presumably going over, I think that they become even bigger stars by being in there with Triple H, particularly. You mentioned Daniel Bryan and Kane, and I think, you know, like you mentioned, unfortunately, what happened with his father, and then, you know, you add into that the marriage, and then you just add into the fact that Kane is not a compelling foil for Daniel Bryan at this point. That's, you know, kind of a three-pronged reason why I think that this particular match doesn't have the steam that you would think it would coming off of that great moment at the end of Mania where Daniel Bryan finally realizes his dream.
Yeah, I would prefer it if they played up more on their history with Daniel Bryan and Kane. They haven't touched on that at all. You know, you forget that they were a tag team and they, you know, the whole hug it out thing. They've mentioned nothing of that. He's just turned back into the Big Red Monster. And I think they've tried their best to salvage whatever they can for this match. But I will say the Kane beat down Daniel Bryan was pretty impressive. That third tombstone on the table and to give the announcers credit, the announcers sold it well. They made it believe. They made you believe that this was actually a serious attack, and you know Daniel Bryan could be really hurt. And granted, he showed up a week later with a neck brace and business as usual. But I think they've tried their best. But yeah, this shouldn't be the main event.
Yeah, and it was a really cool visual, like you said. I think it was undercut by the fact that they did it 2 weeks before the pay per view because Daniel Bryan really should have sold it. And we shouldn't have seen him for, you know, at least a week.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was his call. I mean, I hope it was his call and they didn't ask him to come back. If he needed another week to grieve, then I would assume that he would have been given that. But you never know.
Yeah, so those are the two big matches. Probably the next match down would be Bray Wyatt and John Cena in a steel cage match. And we also had one of the weirdest slash best segments in recent memory this past Monday on Raw, where Bray Wyatt brought out the Boys Choir of Harlem. And that would have made it even better, because just all these little black boys.
We got the whole motherfucking world in our hands. All of it.
That would have made it even better. But no, he had a regular children's choir of all children of all ethnicities. And they sang He's Got the Whole World in His Hands. And then they put on the sheep mask. And it was very cool. And Cena sold it like his faith was broken because the children had turned their backs on him. But then an hour later, it was business as usual.
Yeah, it started off with him talking about how could you, in terms of he had voted in the 3-on-1 match the previous week, and then the kids came out and they turned on him. But I thought this was great. I thought this had been great for WrestleMania, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, what they did with Bray was great as it was, but if they went it through a different direction and for his entrance and have the kids come out and sing, I think that would have been amazing. I thought this was better than, what was it, the Occupy?
When everybody was in the ring.
Yeah, I think it was better. It was better than that. It caught my attention more than having random fans with T-shirts on, you know, getting in the ring. But yeah, this was great. A little creepy that the little girl was sitting on Bray Wyatt's lap, but we'll let that slide. In terms of the match itself, I got no interest in the match again. I thought the match in Mania was pretty boring, actually. The steel cage element really doesn't do anything for me. I just hope Bray Wyatt goes over.
Yeah, the steel cage is a silly stip because you know that Harper and Rowan are going to be involved in some way, shape, or form, so it doesn't make sense to put that obstruction in your way. I was actually intrigued in the match heading into WrestleMania. I'm not so much intrigued about this one because these guys are pretty much locked into their characters, so Bray Wyatt is who he is. John Cena is who he is. If you saw Raw this past Monday, you saw that, 2 or 3 minute piece on Make-A-Wish that they had in the body of the show. It's like, come on, this guy is not going to turn heel anytime soon, if ever. But I do think that there is value with these guys apart. So, you know, for instance, you talk about Daniel Bryan having interesting guys to work against. I think either Bray Wyatt or John Cena would be a good next program for him after Kane. But I think Bray Wyatt and John Cena, the time for these guys is done. Because for Bray Wyatt, I think you need a hero that can get as dark and as serious as he is on the heel side. And that guy is not John Cena.
If this is the end, where do you think John Cena goes? I actually do want to see a rematch with him and Bryan at SummerSlam. I'd prefer to see that over Lesnar and Bryan.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's made no mention of the title recently. He seems to sort of be content in working with the younger guys and helping them out, which is, you know, I applaud him for doing that, because some guys, especially at his stature and level, could just say, hey, I'm either in the title picture or, you know, I'm going home. So I don't know which direction they go with him after this.
If they're going to make him the guy that's kind of like the measuring stick for the young guys, then because I was going to say, I would like to see him against Bryan at SummerSlam, but if he's going to be that kind of gatekeeper at this point while they let Daniel Bryan have his run at the top, I think the next guy is Rusev.
That should be interesting.
It's, you know, and after he has his hate crime match, his handicap hate crime match on Extreme Rules against R-Truth Xavier Woods, which he should have no problem with, I think the next way you go is, you know, have Lana come out and talk about he's the greatest athlete in the WWE and there's nobody that can challenge him. And then you can contrast that with what Cena said before Mania, which is like, everybody's trying to take a run at me, but if you want to be the top guy around here, you got to go through me.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because other than that, I think, you know, I don't know where you go with Cena if he's not in with Bryan or he's not in with Rusev.
Yeah, it's a good point. He's sort of in a weird spot at the moment, and
unless they want to, what's the guy, Adam Rose or Bo Dallas, one of these new guys that, and they want to come right out of the gate with them and Cena.
I think Rose is going to be a babyface by default, just based on the entrance alone. Uh, Bo Dallas would be a heel. I mean, actually, Bo Dallas wouldn't be a bad choice.
I'm wondering how Bo was going to come across, though, because, I mean, it's not like they're repackaging the guy. Like, it's still, like, we know who Bo Dallas is. And we know that he came up and he had a little bit of a run, and then he was gone. And if you didn't watch NXT, you're like, okay, that guy didn't work. That guy failed. And so now he's back and he's obviously better. But it's like, if you're just a casual viewer, if you just watch Raw, I don't know if there's enough. Like, they've got their work cut out with them with Bo Dallas.
But if you're a casual viewer, I mean, did you really catch the Bo Dallas era before? I mean, he was only around a few weeks. So if you're the casual fan, you have a better shot of not even remembering this dude because he was at Royal Rumble, and then he – let me see if I find it. He wrestled the night after Raw against who?
He was essentially a Maven. He had a big spot in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Didn't he beat Wade Barrett?
I think that was it. Let me look on the wiki. The wiki never lies about this stuff.
Yeah. But speaking of Wade Barrett's starting to get a big push. And he will be challenging Big E, no Langston, for the Intercontinental Championship. And I have a feeling that this could be it for Big E's run. I don't think they've been high on him as of late. And it doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, before we dive into Big E. So, yeah, he won the NXT Battle Royal. He was in the Battle Royal, the Royal Rumble. He fought Wade Barrett, and then the rematch was on NXT, and then that was it. He was back to NXT. So, I mean, there's a good chance if you weren't watching those 2 weeks that actually that weekend because it was Sunday, Monday, then maybe you don't know Bo Dallas. So, you never know. As for Big E, yeah. I don't know what happened with him. He started off strong, and then I can't tell you the last time I saw Big E wrestle on Raw. He's been relegated to television watching duty while the tournament's been going on. So I think they're really behind Barrett at the moment, and I see Barrett winning the title.
Yeah, which to me it's a waste of Big E, and I think that it's crazy because about this time last year, maybe a little bit later, everybody was talking about, you know, Big E and Cesaro. Like, those are those two guys that you can see the company starting to get behind. And Cesaro, we see where he's at now, and he's definitely still in a position where he can make some noise. But Big E, I don't see them doing much with him. And, you know, if the problem is him talking, then they could have given him a mouthpiece because mm-hmm. That's the only thing I see that doesn't connect, because he's physically impressive. He's got the look that Vince and Triple H like, and he's a decent worker in the ring for a big guy.
I mean, he's pretty funny when he's being himself. When he's trying to, you know, be this character, then yeah, I can see where he probably shouldn't be talking, but he seems to be a pretty charismatic, pretty funny dude. But yeah, since before the Rumble, I mean, he's just sort of been stale. I mean, he's been the champion, but he hasn't really been out there. So I'm curious to see what happens in that match, just to see, like, you know, in the event that Big E does retain, do they want to keep this up with him and Wade Barrett, maybe, you know, build a feud off that, or if this is just it for him and they find another direction to off him.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they could form a stable with all these disgruntled brothers.
Oh. Yeah, be copying TNA.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Yes, it will.
15 TNA fans that are left.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is a. I don't know who it was. It might have been Topher Epps, friend of the program, listens to the law, and he's always out there with the scoops. And he was the first person that alerted me to the spoilers. And I usually try to avoid the spoilers because I want to watch the show, you know, week by week. But these were too good to ignore. So if you're a TNA fan, earmuffs for the next couple of minutes, but we're going to get into some TNA spoilers.
Yeah, so I guess starting next week, at the end of next week's show, we see the MVP heel turn in week one, which is next week.
Yeah, which they already planted the seeds for tonight.
Yeah. And then the following week, we see that MVP has some backup in
Bobby Lashley.
Some backup. And Bobby Lashley and Kenny King, who I guess take out Eric Young. The mighty Eric Young needs three people to beat him up. But I have no idea what they're doing with this. And, you know, I've said from the beginning, since or at least this year, I stopped watching TNA. But if they do go this heel MVP route, I mean,
they're gonna get you back. They're gonna get you back with this.
No, they're not. But what about the whole Dixie thing? Would that mean two separate heel authority figures / figureheads?
I see it as, and this is the question, because MVP in storyline is the director of wrestling operations. Dixie is still the president of TNA, and so you've got two heel factions, and I think that the way that you can kind of write around it is MVP goes to Dixie, or they have some sort of meeting, and he's like, I didn't realize how difficult this job was and all the stuff that you had to put up with. And that could be the way to kind of gloss over that hole in the logic that they created for themselves. But I think that, you know, you've got MVP, and it's actually a better role for him to be more of an active participant instead of trying to be this authority figure that wrestles every week for some reason. Just make him a regular-ass heel, and I don't know if that means he gives the power up back to Dixie or what.
Yeah,
but But I do think this is a better role for him and a better role. Bobby Lashley, just being the muscle that doesn't have to talk, that's a good spot for Bobby Lashley. And Kenny King, I think that, you know, Kenny King could get, I mean, doing this angle is better than doing nothing, which is what Kenny King's been doing for the past 6 months.
Yeah, I really hope they don't do the racial thing. And I mean, just the timing of it, with everything with the Donald Sterling stuff. And
Dixie Sterling!
I mean, the Sterling stuff broke Saturday, and then Monday they started rolling out this stuff about the racial. I mean, we're just assuming it's racial because we're reading spoilers, but I mean, when you see three black wrestlers unite, it's going to be racial, folks. This isn't a coincidence. This isn't, oh, let's just Lashley and King, just come here. No. There's a deeper meaning behind this, so I am curious to see how this plays out. I really hope that, you know, just based on some of the creative that TNA's put out recently, my God. The Carney gimmick that's on its way, I mean, that sounds dreadful. The Sam Shaw stuff didn't sound too good. Willow.
Yeah, Willow's terrible.
And I don't blame TNA so much. I blame TNA for giving Jeff Hardy the permission to do that. I mean, I think that is mostly Jeff's doing. Not like TNA created Willow. Willow's already created in Jeff Hardy's head.
It is a mad animation.
Yeah, so they gave him the green light on that. But, we'll see what happens.
But, yeah, I think that there's a way to do a racial story without hitting people over the head. And one of the examples that I really like that I don't know if it really connected with the audience, but I enjoyed it, was the Muhammad Hassan deal.
Yeah.
Where he wasn't just your typical anti-American Arab and he's this foreigner, but he was like, yo, I'm an American and you guys are treating me like crap because of 9/11. So yeah, I feel some type of way. And it was almost a more nuanced version of that stereotypical Arabian heel. And I think there's a way to do this with MVP and Kenny King and Bobby Lashley, where it's like, it's not just because we're black guys, it's because there have not been opportunities and avenues for us to pursue our career. And so, yeah, we're going to join together because there's strength in numbers. Do need a white guy, though.
Or not even that. I mean, it could just be, hey, look, I mean, these are my boys. This is who I'm hanging out with, you know, on the road. I hang out with Lashley and King. It doesn't have to be. It can be racial without being racial, if that makes any sense. They don't have to beat you over the top and say, you know, dress them up in the African colors and just dashikis. Yeah. No, they can just be a three-man black stable and, you know, you assume in your head that these three guys must hang out because they're black. So just let it be like that. Don't try to. That's when wrestling promotions get in trouble, is when they try to go over the top and try to do too much, especially when it comes to racial stuff, and especially now where people are so sensitive to this stuff that I could see if they do something, you know, if the WWE was doing or was around an attitude in terms of the Twitter era and some of the stuff they're doing then, I could see them definitely, you know, being in trouble and having the same kind of backlash that, you know, Donald Sterling was stating this week.
They do need a white guy, though.
What would his role be?
I think you need one white man just to make it so when they get heat, it's not racist heel heat and it's just regular heel heat, especially in some of those towns TNA plays.
Oh, that's the other thing too. Yeah, there.
I think out of all the candidates on the heel side, a guy that's A is not doing anything, B is a great talker, and C has a history with MVP and Kenny King, as we've established in the storyline already, is Austin Aries.
Yeah. What's his contract situation? Is he another one that
I know Daniels is gone. Kaz is coming up, Kurt's coming up. I'm not sure about Aries though. But if he's sticking around, I think that would be a nice addition to that group to make it a foursome. So that way you've got MVP as your main guy, you've got your tag team, and then you got your guy like Aries, who is, you know, the right hand man.
Looks like he's under contract. Oh, he's in the doghouse, quote unquote. Remember that was the whole thing about him blowing up at tapings?
Yeah. Yeah, because if you notice, he's been on TV very sparingly.
Yeah, he was on this week or this set of tape. I think he was either he was on Impact or he was on Explosion for the next couple weeks. So he's around, but
he's
not been a central figure. But I mean, outside of Aries, looking at this roster, who's left? I mean, there's no one really that could work with this.
Like
group.
I was gonna say in terms of your heels, your top heels are, at this point, Magnus, who doesn't fit in that group, I don't think.
No.
Bobby Roode, who I think may be getting ready to have a face turn here. James Storm, who I think is a great heel, but he doesn't fit in that group.
He'd be owning the black wrestlers. He wouldn't be supporting them.
Then again, rednecks and brothers do share a lot of similarities. And being down south, there's always that one crazy white boy in the crew. And if James Storm would fit into that description.
They couldn't fit the country music thing.
Be like Bubba Sparks in the Dungeon Family.
Nah, it's Aries by default. Cause,
I think Aries is the best option.
EC3?
Oh, I love EC3. I think he's probably one of the brightest spots in TNA. But I think Aries is a better choice. But yeah, EC3, I do like Spud and EC3's little deal. They had a fun little gimmick tonight where they were doing some amateur wrestling to show off EC3's amateur wrestling skills before Kurt Angle came out and broke it up. I like that pairing. But if they don't put Aries in there, EC3 would probably be the next
best option. DJ Z. You got to have a DJ if you're going to have some brothers.
Black guy's got to have a DJ.
Play my music.
Oh yeah, TNA is they're in a weird place.
At this point, and who's left?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They just in terms of the people on the roster, they've got some good young talent. They've got some decent mid-carders. They've got, you know, guys like Angle and Jeff Hardy when he's not Willow that are still serviceable. But between creative and the guys that they've lost, it's not a good look.
They're down to 50 bodies according to their roster page, and that's even counting announcers and stuff. So,
and I counting Willow twice. Willow and Jeff Hardy is two separate people.
Oh, is it a question? Let me see. And yes, they are.
Joseph Parks and Abyss.
Jeez, you're right. Yeah. All right. So you take out the duplicates and Tanay and Taz and Borash.
Oh man.
Then you're probably looking at closer to 40 people who are left, and that's pretty small for a roster. Well, and even some of the guys, Hector Guerrero, he's not on TV.
Yeah.
Hernandez isn't on TV.
I can't remember the last time.
Gary Bischoff isn't on TV. So if you cut those guys out.
In terms of like actually active workers that are on TV from week to week, I'd say you're probably talking about maybe 30.
Yeah, they even have King Mo listed here. They have Rampage listed here. I'm surprised they don't have Tito in here. Yeah, so yeah, I would. Who's Willie Urbina?
Willie Urbina is one of the Spanish announcers.
Oh, gee, they count everyone on this list. All right, yes. Good God. All right, 30 people.
Yeah, they got like 30 people, and out of those 30 people, probably another, what, 5 or 6 of them are knockouts, so they don't count.
Yeah, so 25. Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, not the greatest talent available. It's not like Global Force where they've got, what, 500 people available?
That's bullshit.
For use at any time?
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, when do they go to New York? Because I think that'll be the next kind of big gauge for TNA.
Not until June.
Okay, so they got some time to get some stuff straightened out. Because I do think MVP is your top heel. They could do worse.
Over Madness, you think?
Madness.
See, that's the problem. I don't know. It seems like they have more heels than baby faces at the moment.
Yeah. Now, that's why I think Bobby Roode is about to switch.
Okay, the balance.
Because he did the whole thing tonight with Eric Young beat him in the title match, and they had that show of respect afterwards. And he's had beef with Dixie over the past few months. So I think Bobby Roode is going to end up switching. So then you have what? Eric Young, Bully Ray, and Bobby Roode is your top three baby faces?
Yeah. And I guess what, Willow?
And Will, yeah.
Boy, is he babyface? What is he?
I don't think they have any idea what Willow is. All right. Like, they just need to stop it. Like, somebody needs to, whoever, like Dixie Carter, because she's the one ultimately in charge of this thing. She needs to go up to Jeff Hardy or get her mama to do it and say, look, this ain't working. We're going to have a Willow funeral next week. Everybody in the audience is going to have umbrellas, and we'll bid farewell to this character.
Sorry, I was just counting the number of active people in this roster now. I'm fascinated. Rob Terry's now active again. He's coming back. So we'll add him. Joe's been off TV.
Yeah,
so it's roughly 25 males that are around.
Yeah, and like one of those males is Rockstar Spud. And
yeah.
Yes. Not the best crop to choose from, but there are some, like I said, EC3 and Magnus. There are some really good guys in that group, but with the creative around them, I don't have a lot of faith in the company right now. But we'll see. I think this heel thing with MVP, because week after week, regardless of the crap that he's given, he has the personality to get it over as a performer. So I think MVP is your top heel. You know, he may be the spark that this thing needs.
Speaking of TNA, Paul Heyman was on Steve Austin's podcast, and the discussion of TNA came up because he was talking about ECW and how much money he lost when he had to file bankruptcy. And the number he tossed out there, which I think might be total bullshit, was...
Consider the source.
Yeah, that TNA had invested / lost $70 to $80 million, which I don't see how that's even possible.
No.
But basically his whole point was when ECW filed for bankruptcy, he was $7 million in the hole, and $3 million was actually being held up by the pay-per-view companies that actually owed ECW money. But the pay-per-view company knew that ECW didn't have the money to fight legally, so they held the money. And his whole thing was that for as much shit as people WCW or WCW when they folded, that they had no business making or not falling behind as far as they did when they actually folded. And I guess he interviewed with TNA a couple years ago about coming in, and people had told him that this company was just bleeding money, and he didn't give a prediction of what he thought would happen, but he basically said they were being funded by, you know, a billionaire or a millionaire in the Carter family, and he didn't have high hopes for long terms for the company.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's outside of the number that he gave, I think that's an accurate description of the company. But, again, the biggest factors to me is when it comes time to re-up for that Spike contract. That is still kind of the question. You know, that's kind of the most important fan that TNA has to impress. It's not the hardcore fan or the casual fan. It's the fan that is in charge of Spike TV, the fans in the boardroom, and the sponsors and the advertisers. And I think that's the most important battle that they have to fight. And if they can somehow get another renewal on this contract, then I think they'll be okay for however long that contract goes. That's basically the bottom line. And you know, it doesn't matter how good or bad the shows are. It's about how can they convince Spike that they're a worthy partner.
And that's what Heyman mentioned, too. He mentioned the reason why ECW failed was syndication. He couldn't get syndication for the show. And without syndication to get your product out there, then you're nothing. It doesn't matter how great the wrestler is or how great the product is. Without TV, then it's really hard to survive. And that's the problem I see with this Jeff Jarrett project. You know, unless they secure some actual, at least in terms of, I mean, I think you got to do better than Sinclair, what ROH is doing, because I think that no one, I mean, not enough households, or at least not enough major households get Sinclair. That's the problem with ROH, is that you're talking about a small audience, you know, only the hardcore fans who go out of the way to find it. But if you're trying to draw in the general audience, you need to have national syndication. So I think that'll make or break Jeff Jarrett's promotion as well.
Yeah, and I think that what would lead me to have faith in that promotion, and I actually have more faith in their future than TNA's, to be honest, but I think is working with Mark Burnett. Because I don't think he would put his name on a product if he wasn't at least somewhat assured that they would have a broadcast partner.
Yeah, yeah. And I know they announced this week that they're partnering up with AAA, which we thought would happen because it made sense to have some partnership with another company, especially you know, AAA will be on TV of some sort.
And it's a company that Jared already has a relationship with.
That too, yeah. And actually, I mean, that's what I thought the announcement originally would be some kind of partnership with AAA. So,
you know. Maybe they'll have a Donald Sterling gimmick and it'll be Senior Sterling.
Oh, jeez.
I don't want any brown people in my building.
I wouldn't put it past Jeff Jarrett.
If this TNA thing, if they don't do a blatant copy of this Donald Sterling angle, I'm sure it won't be long before some company does.
I don't think. Oh, there's no way WWE would touch it because they're...
No, not WWE, but I'm saying this. Yeah.
But, I mean, how often is TNA raunchy? TNA's not really raunchy anymore. They're just bad. They're not really offensive bad. They're just, you know, doing weird shit.
Even though Russo was still on the payroll.
Yeah.
That's the question right there. Would you rather... Because apparently he's on the payroll, but he's not actively involved with creative. Would you rather have Russo creative, which is... terrible, but it's never dull, or the current creative, which outside of one or two angles isn't really terrible. It's just there's no forward momentum with it.
Russo, if Russo showed up on TV, I would watch. If he just came out and
like you'd rather have an entertaining train wreck than just a boring ride through the countryside.
Yeah, I mean, it can be entertaining and not make sense as opposed to boring and still not make sense, because either way, it's not going to make sense probably with Russo. But it'll at least be just
really, yeah, Russo knows how to keep your attention. And
yeah. And if he came out on TNA and cut one of those Russo promos from the late 90s, I'd be in.
I'm here with MVP and the black guys.
There's your white person. Bam.
You guys never gave him a shot.
There's your white person. Russo.
He could basically cut that Hulk Hogan promo from, what was it, Halloween Havoc?
Oh, when he shot the shoot on Hogan? Yeah.
Yeah. He basically cut that, just insert Dixie Carter's name in. These men have been held back by Dixie Carter and her politics and bullshit. Now I do want to see Vince Russo show up in TNA. Screw it. Like we've already got Willow and Sam Shaw. Vince Russo is no worse than either one of those characters.
He's not.
Mm. That's a depressing way to end the segment off, Marcus.
No, Ted, I'm pumped now. I want Russo. I want it to happen.
So Russo would get you back into watching TNA?
It would get me back into watching TNA.
All right. So yeah,
make sure you ask Joe Poe this on the show tonight. Ask Pollock. If Russo showed up with the new Black State, well, if they do spoilers, but if he showed up with the new group and cut a shoot on Dixie and just the way TNA has sort of crumbled the last 6 months, tell him he wouldn't be interested. I would be all in.
Yeah, at least for that first week or so.
Yeah, well, the first week, and then the second week, I'd be reading spoilers again. So,
yeah, so we'll leave it there, but spoiler alert, we got a great segment 4 coming up next, so do not touch that dial. More Kings of Sport right after this.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell
world of sports is going on here. Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we go, we have to end things off the way we do each and every episode, and that is with the one and only, often imitated but never ever duplicated, segment 4, and that's where we kind of go around the world of sports, entertainment, pop culture, and just throw all the ratchetness of the week into one big old pot and see what cooks up. And this week I know we got a nice stew full of racism, full of crab legs, and full of crack. So we got a lot to talk about this week, Marcus.
Yeah, this has been quite the week, from the Sterling stuff to Jameis Winston to Rob Ford.
This first story, like we were talking before the show, I did not know about this until about 30 minutes ago when I saw you post something on Facebook, and you hadn't heard about this until a couple hours ago, I guess.
Yeah, so, you know, we mentioned Donald Sterling earlier in the show, and you would figure this was the one week where if you're going to say something racist or controversial, maybe you should hold off until next week. But no, Chris Mad Dog Russo of Mad Dog Radio on Sirius XM went on a bit of a rant on the radio. I believe this was on Thursday. And his rant was, a caller called in and pointed out to him that his affiliated branded radio station doesn't have a Black radio host. And Mad Dog went on to explain why he feels that, you know, he's aware of the situation, but he feels that there's no one worthy in the Black radio market that is worthy of hosting a radio show on his network, essentially. It's baffling that we still, not only that we still have to feel like Black people and minorities in general have to prove themselves to be above the competition, but who is to say that Chris Russo is the authority when it comes to Black radio talent? That I don't get at that at all.
And who is the authority to say that? Who is the person that says Chris Russo is the authority on radio talent, period?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're not familiar with Chris Russo used to have a show with Mike Francesa on WFAN in New York. Russo and the Mad Dog, they went their separate ways a few years ago, so now both guys have individual shows. And Chris Russo also has a show on MLB Network that started this season, so now he's at a daily platform on a TV network, and I'm sure MLB just loves this because they have their own issues when it comes to the lack of Black players in baseball that they're dealing with. And you know, when you say comments like this, you really have to readdress and look at your relationships that you're building with these people on your network.
Yeah, and this, full disclosure, folks, this is something that is a pet peeve of mine. I've had many discussions with people in the sports broadcasting industry that I consider friends, and they have gotten very contentious when it comes to the monochromatic look of a lot of the radio hosts and a lot of the executives and producers in the world of sports broadcasting, both in radio and television. And it's just a bad choice. At worst, it's flat out prejudicial and maybe racist. At best, it's extremely stupid and insensitive, especially in the wake of the Donald Sterling issue. But the word that you mentioned, the key word, you know, he didn't say qualified. He didn't say, you know, experienced enough. He said worthy. And that, to me, speaks to a larger issue. And it's like, you know, you can tell, and let's just use me for an example. You know, I've got 15 years experience in broadcasting, both TV and radio, internationally and here in America. And if you say, hey, Nate, you don't have enough experience to work at my network, I can be like, okay, I can go out and get more experience. Or, Nate, we just don't think you're good enough to work at this station. Like, okay, you know, some people like cucumbers better pickle. But if you say you're not worthy or you're not deserving of a spot here, that tells me that you're not even looking at my body of work. You're not even looking at my qualifications. You're looking at something else, something that is outside of my control. And to say, I mean, just look at the, you know, the just off the top of my head, great black radio hosts, you know, Mike Hill, Jonathan Coachman, what's my man at ESPN?
Freddie Coleman,
the Two Live Stews, Jason Whitlock, Bomani Jones, just off the top of my head. Michael Wilbon, when he does his spots on Tony Kornheiser's show, you know, Wilbon could easily host his own show. Mm-hmm. He just chooses not to. And to say that there's no talented or worthy, you know, Jemele Hill, Michael Smith, that there's no worthy, Stephen A. Smith has a show in New York City, you know, that there's no worthy or deserving black talent out there, it's just idiotic and ridiculous, and it's not a good look for Mad Dog, because honestly, this is the first I've heard of him in years, and I'm somebody that listens to sports radio on a regular basis. So this is the first time I'm hearing your name in a couple years. That's not a good look for me, and it's not a good look for your career.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up wanting to do radio. I was a huge Jim Rome fan as a kid, like as a young kid, like before people knew Jim Rome was, when Jim Rome was just doing a local show
in San Diego.
And yes, Texas Sports since 90.
Yes, he came, he followed Hacksaw.
Yes. That's right. I forgot you had San Diego ties. Yeah.
So. When I would go to sleep every night, I would listen to Jim Rome, and that would be like I'd have my radio time for like an hour. Mm. And my parents would let me listen to 1 hour of sports talk because Jim Rome would come on the late show.
Yeah, he would go 7 to 12 or something like that.
Yeah, so they'd let me listen to an hour of Jim Rome before bed, and then, you know, that was it. And so, yeah, you know, that Jim Rome and guys like that. Jim Rome was one of the few guys in the industry that I have no problem with because he was original. He did his own thing. He worked his way to the top. But now you got all these guys that want to be Jim Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that the way to get there is by copying him and by being brash. And it's like, that's not what made Rome Rome. That's part of it. But what made Rome Rome was that he was funny. He was smart. He knew how to get on your nerves, but he also knew how to bring heart to stories. He knew how to do great interviews, and he was the total package. But a lot of these guys out there are, for lack of better words, they're imposters.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of local sports talk radio, I rarely listen to local talk radio now. It's just not the same. I don't know when exactly the radio landscape shifted to the point where it is now, but I just feel like nothing is, you know, original or creative. The sports talk radio I do listen to will be through podcast form. So, you know, sometimes I'll listen to the Tony Kornheiser show every day. Occasionally Dan Patrick, if I remember to listen. But
yeah, I'll say Tony Kornheiser, Dan Patrick. Scott Van Pelt is good when he's on.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and Mike is okay. They're not as good as they once were, but that's about it.
Yeah. So
it's, like for me, it's sports talk radio in terms of a terrestrial form is sketchy at best, because now you got stations that are so fragmented. Like I think the station, we have one station left, it's the ESPN affiliate, and the other station that we had before it went under, it was in the morning it was NBC Sports Radio, in the afternoon it was CBS Sports, and at night it was Fox Sports. Mm. And so there was no identity to the station, and I'm sure there's lots of stations around the country that are like that. And it's like, I knew that it didn't matter about talent when, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter about talent, but that's not the main criteria. When we had an opening down here about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, for a afternoon drive time host. And our good buddy Bobby Fresh was one of the candidates. And they denied him because he didn't have enough experience, so they say. And they brought in a guy from Boston that did weekend sports in Boston to do a local show Monday through Friday in Newport News, Virginia.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Right, right. And, you know, like, what are you doing? Just because this guy worked at an ESPN affiliate and you're like, okay, he's one of our guys, we're going to bring him up. You know, there's no service to the community. There's no service to your fan base. You know, when your local show sounds like a carbon copy of Colin Cowherd, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, he shouldn't be the example of what you want to model your radio career path or path after. No, but no.
No. But yeah, and I think it's even worse though for the Mad Dog show, because this is, if I'm reading this correctly, he's got his own network, like Howard Stern, right?
Correct. On, yeah. Sirius. So he's got shows within the Mad Dog network.
Right. So he basically has carte blanche. He can say, okay, I like this guy. This guy's good. This guy's funny. This guy's smart. I'm going to give this guy a show. He could have any wide range of talent that he wants. He could mm-hmm. have a female host, a Mexican host, a black host, gay or lesbian host. He has the power to make the change, you know, because he said that he realizes it's an issue. Well, if you realize it's an issue and you have the power to change that and you still don't, then that's on you.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's telling him he has to have 10 shows on his network done by white guys that are 40 to 55.
Let's yeah. pull up who's on his network and see.
That's a good question. Let's see who's on his network, because I'm guessing
anyone that we have heard of.
I'm guessing all male, and I'm guessing 35 to 55. And if there is a black host, it would be an athlete.
Well, he's already said there's no black host, and he's well aware that there's no black host. So
that's the other crutch. It's like if. Whenever especially a national network, when they get a black host, it's usually an athlete.
Yeah.
And the shows, 9 times out of 10, aren't very good. Every now and then you'll get an athlete who is great and funny and articulate, or a former coach or something like that. But for the most part, it's like, white athletes aren't even really that interesting.
So there's all males.
Okay.
Dan Patrick's listed in here, but... That's because only his show is broadcast on there. He's not affiliated with them besides that. Evan Cohen. I've never heard of this guy. Lance Meadow.
Evan Cohen, one of the Cohen brothers.
Yeah. Glenn Ordway. He's a Boston guy. I know his name.
You see, that sounds familiar.
He used to have a morning show in Boston on the Big Boston Sports Network, and I believe there was a falling out with his co-host or something along those lines. Either it was drive time or morning, but I do recognize his name. Steve Phillips, former general manager of the New York Mets.
Okay.
And former ESPN employee. Adam Schein, don't know him.
I thought you were going to say Shefty for a minute.
No, I wasn't Shefter. And Steve Torre. So he could be, he looks sort of, could have some color.
He's the token minority on the Mad Dog Network?
He might be. Prior to joining SiriusXM, Steve spent 18 years as the morning drive anchor and sports director of 1010 Wins Radio in New York City. 1010 Wins is basically like your news update station. It's not sports talk, it's news.
And if he spent 18 years there, more than likely he's in his late 40s.
He doesn't look late 40s. Yeah, he's 40s, though. But yeah, everyone on here is with the exception maybe one guy, let's in the 40s.
Or I know Mad Dog's like 55, something like that.
Yeah, at least.
So yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, there's nothing against white guys in their 50s or in their 40s. Some of my best friends are white guys in their 40s. Shout out to Jamie and Bill. But, you know, when you're trying to develop a network, you want to have a specific voice for your network overall, but you also want to have variation within that. And if your hosts are all coming from the same background or a similar background and there's no diversity, then that's not a good look. And then, you know, you don't want to have diversity just for diversity's sake, but to say that there's no black or Latino or female host out there that's worthy of being on that network, you know, that's straight bull.
It's funny enough, I'm on their page, and on the right-hand side is their last tweets, and the last tweet they sent out, Mark Spears of Yahoo Sports is on now with Taylor Zarzor. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, they at least have black guest. Shout out to Mark.
But yeah, I think, where are they based out of? I've got like a B in my bonnet.
I would guess New York City.
Are they New York or LA?
Oh, I'm guessing New York. But that's where I think he lives in New York, so I'm pretty sure it's New York.
I got a B in my bonnet. I'm gonna start a campaign. I'm gonna put together a package, and we're gonna get the Godfather show on Mad Dog Radio. If I have to call the NAACP and the disgraced LA president that had to step down today, we're gonna get some Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton,
Leon Jenkins.
Yes, Leon Jenkins.
And his escrow.
If that don't sound like the shadiest, who's your president? The Right Honorable Leon Jenkins. NAACP president / bail bondsman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so yeah, tighten up, Mad Dog. I'm thinking about it though, man. I'm gonna get on Twitter when we finish this show. I'm gonna send out some challenges. Maybe that's like maybe I've been too nice, Marcus. I've been, you know, submitting applications and going through the proper channels. But have you seen the movie Head of State with Chris Rock?
Of course not. Well, wait, did I see that?
Did Chris Rock ran for president?
I did see that. No, take that back.
Bernie Mac.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't very good. But I liked the scene where Chris Rock was able to convince the president to get him into a debate.
Oh, yeah, by
basically just calling him out. I thought I told you that we won't stop. So that's my strategy. For the next 2 weeks, I'm going to call out Chris Russo anytime I have a chance. And Chris Russo has officially surpassed his stepbrother Vince.
You should call into the show.
In my Russo hit list. You know, I'm going to call the show. I'm going to throw
that's
out
how it started. A listener asked a question, and then that's how it all spiraled out of control.
When is the show on next? Because I will call. Tell me it's tonight.
It's in the afternoon, I believe. Let me see.
Probably not until Monday. Do you think he'll be back on Monday? Do you think any repercussions are going to come from this?
Nope.
Any public apologies?
Maybe a bullshit apology, but I mean.
Yeah, Monday.
He's on 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, 3 to 6 Eastern, yes. I get home from work.
Monday through Friday.
5? Yeah. Chris Russo is going to hear from me Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern. So, yeah, listen, that's the only time I'll promote his show, because I'm going to call in, and it might be the last time they let me call in. But
by the way, the Steve Torrey guy, his show is called Dodd Bites, and what he does is pretty much plays like the best of from the Mad Dodd show 3 hours before. So he doesn't really have a voice. He's pushing buttons. So,
damn, Senor Torrey.
Yeah.
Damn, that's cold-blooded, man. Oh yeah, this could go either brilliant or this could go sideways. But either way, it'll make for a good podcast the next week. Maybe that'll be an update I'll have to give next week to let everybody know how the call went.
Yeah, we can pull the audio somehow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Yeah, because when I saw this, like I let Marcus know when I got home. I was like, a little bit, but then I started reading the article and I was like, wait. And then I started reading the comments about the article and I was like, I started getting heated, so I had to have me a cigarette before I even got on Skype to talk to Marcus about the foolishness that he had just sent me. I was like Roy Jones in that Y'all Must Have Forgot, like, don't get me hyped because I'm amped already, took titles from fighters who was champs already. So yeah, we will have a follow-up one way or another to this whole Mad Dog situation next week on the Kings of Sport. But let's keep it moving in segment 4. with another racially tinged story. It is getting all racial up in this piece. Brother Marcus, I know this isn't our Ask a Hockey Negro segment, but what's going on with a certain hockey Negro?
Yes, P.K. Subban. I guess he would be a Canadian hockey Negro, because I believe he's...
Yeah, he was born in Toronto.
Yeah, so he's Montreal star defenseman, happens to be black, happened to score the game winner, game one against Boston.
Great game, by the way.
Yeah, double overtime. And, of course, the racially charged slash racist tweets came in after the goal. And wasn't a good look. I don't want to put it on the city of Boston. It's hard to tell where exactly the tweets are coming from. And I'm sure this happens on a nightly basis whenever the man scores. That, yeah, I'm sure if you search his name, you'll find all this stuff. But they were playing the Boston Bruins, and there were a number of tweets that were offensive talking about P.K. Subban. And the NHL had released a statement today to sort of denounce the tweets. And actually came from Boston Bruins president Cam Neely, former NHL player. So yeah, it's not a good look. It's another, I mean, well, Twitter, I mean, people have no filter when it comes to Twitter, but you would think that of all the weeks, hey, maybe ease up on calling this man a nigger after he scored a game winning goal. Just hold that to game four, maybe not game
can
one.
Can we save the niggas for next week?
Yeah.
And not just the hypocrisy of, I'm assuming these are all Bruins fans, either Bruins fans or racists that just want an opportunity to say racist stuff.
Yeah, and it's not the first time this has happened with the Bruins fan base. This happened with Joel Ward in 2012 when he was on the Capitals. He got a number of racist tweets during the playoffs. So this is an ongoing situation with hockey fans in general. And
but what makes this even more ignorant, like if racism wasn't ignorant and stupid enough, one of your top players, if you're a Boston Bruins fan, is black. Jerome McGinley. And not only that. Take it a step further, yeah, P.K. Subban's brother.
He's in the organization. Yeah.
He's in your organization.
Yeah, so.
So I guess you don't like niggas, just unless they're your niggas.
Yeah, then it's okay. Then it's cool.
Like that is, like, seriously, like, if I was PK, I would just, RT every nigga tweet to his brother and be like, these your people?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, and for Boston, and this is the other thing with Boston. Like, I mean, you saw the outpouring of love and support that the nation had for Boston last year. And it seemed for a while that they could do no wrong. But let's not forget, folks, before all of the collective love that America showed on Boston. And I went to school in Boston, so I can say this. Boston is one of the most racially charged places I've ever lived. Whether it's black, white, Italian, Middle Eastern, like there is still to this day lingering and definitive lines within the city of Boston. And just because it's 2014, doesn't mean that those lines are erased, especially when you talk about passionate sports fan bases and also drunk sports fan bases.
Yeah.
With access to Twitter. And this makes me mad because I want Boston to win because A, I'm a Jerome McGinley fan, and B, I have friends and ex-friends that are cheering for the Montreal Canadiens, and it would make me the happiest man in the world if the Hawks won and the Canadiens lost. Because I'm a petty person sometimes, Marcus Vandenberg.
Mm-hmm. Just like Floyd Mayweather, huh?
Hey, I ain't going to go as far as Floyd, but sometimes, you know, when you see your girl with Nelly, you want her team to lose.
Yeah.
But yeah, so do you think that this will be it, that with Cam Neely and some of the team organizers coming down on that, do you think that'll be the end of this foolishness, or will it? Will idiots just do what idiots do?
I'm going to say this is going to be it. I don't want, like, the bullshit. Oh, we are one. You know, let's all come to, no. Don't deem me as insincere. Like, you know, this is, whatever they put out or whatever they try to do with the fans, I'm not buying it. I just hope the fans at the Bruins game, you know, don't do anything stupid. Like, you know, we've seen bananas thrown on the ice before in hockey games. And I just don't want anything like that, you know.
Or they could go the complete heel turn and introduce the new team president, Donald Sterling.
Oh, but I mean, I wouldn't mind actually seeing Jerome Adinla address the crowd and say, hey, look, you know, cut this shit out. Like, you can't do this, you know.
Hey, you messing this up for everybody.
Yeah.
Bring Malcolm Subban up. Y'all leave my brother alone. This is like, yeah, after all the good, and PK, I don't think Bill mentioned PK last week.
I don't know why he didn't. He's
we were running down the list of black players.
One of the top defenders in the NHL.
Yeah, maybe.
But he's a Rangers fan, so maybe there's some shit there.
Yeah. So apparently, yeah, he's on the Canadiens men national team. So yeah, he's a pretty good player.
Who are you talking about?
Subban.
Oh, PK?
Yeah, he's on the national team.
Yeah, he's
he's only 24 years.
Yeah, he's really talented. He should have a great career in the NHL.
So, well, it'll be interesting to see if with his brother. Like, I don't know how good his brother is, but it'll be interesting to see if that is a tenable situation with him staying in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, especially we had the old Tim Thomas thing when he was there, and he was mouthing off about the president, and it's just, yeah, it's not pretty, but Boston's one of those cities that still has the reputation to this day, and rightfully so, because they continue to do stuff like this.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, Rodney King said it best, can't we all just get along? The late, great Rodney King. Maybe we need a beer summit like the president had. Or maybe we could all just sit down and enjoy a cold beer and some crab legs, Marcus. Maybe that would bring the America together.
Free Jameis.
And speaking of crab legs, America's favorite Heisman-winning quarterback is back in the news, and not for positive reasons, not for what he's doing on the baseball field, but what he's doing at the Piggly Wiggly, apparently.
Yeah, he got Jameis Winston that pop stealing crab legs from the Publix in Florida.
Come on, man. Jameis. Like, I'm going to let you finish the story, Marcus, but just that headline, just that summary right there. Heisman-winning quarterback of the national championship.
He was hungry.
Seminoles.
They don't feed these
kids. Stole a bucket of crab.
Listen, the man plays two sports. He needs twice the meals.
And I'm thinking, was this like a farmer's market? So they were like fresh, or were they frozen?
Nah, Publix is like the big supermarket down there. They have good food. They have good fresh food.
So these are like real deal crab legs.
Yeah.
Not the like I'm thinking like, you know, the little frozen stringy ones.
No. This is probably, you know, fresh product. I mean, $37 worth. That's a lot of crab legs.
All right, continue with the details, Mark.
He was identified. He got popped for taking.
Of course, he was identified. He's the Heisman-winning quarterback from the national championship-winning football team.
It could have been a FAMU student. You don't know. It's in Tallahassee.
Maybe it was somebody from Florida that was hating on him.
Yeah. So he got cited, and he was suspended from the baseball team, which made Jimbo Fisher happy because now he can't get hurt playing baseball. So that's a win-win. He was actually pitching pretty well. He had 5 saves in the season. He with a 1.50 ERA. So he's a talented pitcher, talented athlete. We all know that. But he's a knucklehead. And granted, we all did stupid shit in college. I'm sure. I don't remember stealing food per se. I remember eating baby food. at the grocery store in college.
How drunk were you?
I was sober.
That makes it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't pay for it, so I just said stealing. But it's not like we took the food out of the store. We just ate it in the store and took pictures. So we all do stupid stuff in college. The problem is he's a public figure at this point. He's 20. I was doing this stuff at 18. He's 20 now. So he's got to know better. And if he really was hungry, which I don't buy, but if he really was hungry, then he's had to talk to his coaches about that. He's had to, you know, find other ways to get fed at this point. You can't steal. Not crab legs. If he was stealing, like, fruit and, you know, bread,
yeah,
that'd be one thing, but crab legs?
We apprehended Mr. Winston, and we opened his sack, and we found crab legs, a stick of butter, some garlic bread, and a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
I was just hungry, man.
At least it wasn't chicken.
Yes, at least it wasn't chicken.
Especially this week. Oh, could you imagine?
We found fried chicken and watermelon on Mr. Winston's person.
The Arizona watermelon. Yeah, it had just been bad. So,
yeah. But, oh, man. Like, I'm sure he could probably go to any McDonald's or Sonic or any fast food joint in Tallahassee and be like, hey, I'll sign a napkin or a picture.
That's illegal. If you...
Come on.
You can't sign stuff for food.
Hey, what they don't know won't hurt them.
It's the TMZ era. He'll be on TMZ, you know, 20 minutes later talking about Jameis Winston's out here trying to get food for autographs. It's just as bad. That's a violation, at least. So this is actually better that he stole instead of...
It's better that he stole crab legs.
Yeah, that's all you need to know about the NCAA. Stealing's better than selling your merchandise.
That's how you know you're starting to get a little fancy though. He's like, man, I'm hungry. Let's go steal some crab legs. How about some chicken cordon bleu? Like I feel he's getting a little too big for his britches, man.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you be too if you had a Heisman Trophy in the room?
You forgot where you came from, Jameis. Steal some steak like the rest of us. Steak them in a pack of cheese, man. That's it. And some oodles and noodles if you're really hungry.
Yeah. That'd have been better.
That's what college is about. Actually, that would have been like the best advertisement for paying players.
It would have been.
If they had caught him like the Heisman Trophy winner stealing a pack of oodles and noodles because he was hungry.
Yeah.
Damn it. Fuck it all up, James. You and your expensive tastes.
Could have been a trendsetter.
Oh, crab. Come on, man. Oh, he reminds me of Cam Newton when Cam Newton was in college, especially if you go back to Florida State with the whole laptop incident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just all the talent in the world and seems to be, you know, I mean, obviously there was the rape case that we talked about in length, but he seems to be a good kid.
Yeah. Just not
questionable,
smart.
Yeah, questionable judgment.
Yeah.
Questionable judgment. Like, and it's like, it's not like Johnny Manziel. Like, Johnny Football has questionable judgment, but it's questionable judgment kind of born out of this kind of sense of, I'm a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Jameis's decisions seem to be just stupid, dumb college kid stuff that you should be past at this point.
Yeah.
So, especially like what? Not next year, but the following year, you'll be a professional athlete.
Yeah, whether, 1 year left.
Whether it be NFL or Major League Baseball, who knows? You're going to be on somebody's professional payroll, and they're not going to take too kindly to that because we all know how big of a buzzword character is, you know, when it comes to MLB and the NFL.
Well, not so much MLB. I don't think they do the same deep dive into backgrounds for their draft. Because, I mean, there's a lot of sketchy dudes in baseball, including...
Yes, he'll please.
He's not sketchy. What are you talking about?
Walked into that one, brother.
No, Tampa Bay is a rapist on their team.
Alleged?
No, convicted.
I say alleged or convicted?
No, he's convicted. He's a rapist. He's a pitcher.
Maybe he was a typing error. Maybe he's a therapist in the offseason.
No. Josh Lucchi. Look him up. Look his story up. Did some horrible things, and I believe he did his time, but he's still playing in the major leagues, so.
Way to bring the show down, Marcus.
Sorry.
Way to bring everything down. We were having so much fun talking about Jameis Winston stealing crab legs, and then you brought us down with the rapist. But there is one man that can get us back up, because he always stays up. And I don't pop mollies. I'm not like Ron Ford. The mayor of Toronto is back in the news. We thought he had calmed down. We thought he had chilled. But I thought I told you he won't stop, Marcus. I guess this past week was very eventful in the life of the current Toronto mayor, but who knows for how long.
When they create the Rob Ford movie, May 1st will be the D-Day for Rob Ford. This will be
that'll be like the beginning of the third act?
Yes, this will be the arc of the movie where everything just goes to hell. Three different stories.
Who do you think would play him?
Who would play Rob Ford?
Yeah, because I know Chris Farley. John Goodman's a good one.
He might be too old, though. Rob Ford's only 44, but he looks 55.
What's his name is kind of a good visual approximation, but I don't think he has the weight for the dramatic scenes. The guy on Saturday Night Live that plays drunk uncle. Bobby Moynihan.
Yeah.
I think he could do the physical stuff, the comedic almost type of stuff, but I don't think you need somebody like a John Goodman or Philip Seymour Hoffman that could carry the weight of the emotional breakdown scenes in the middle of the crack hall.
Yeah, he doesn't really look like anyone.
Like Chris Farley would have been the perfect guy. Yeah. Like maybe Chris Farley's brother.
But yeah, Rob Ford.
Maybe Jim Belushi.
Aren't you naming all these dead people?
Nah, John Belushi's dead. Jim Belushi was according to Jim.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
John Belushi's brother. Maybe Jim Belushi could do a good Rob Ford.
He's too small. He'd have to gain a lot of weight.
I think Jim Belushi could handle it. He ain't doing nothing right now, man. Yeah. he spent up all that. What was that? He wasn't turning Hooch. He was the other dog movie. Canine. He spent up all his canine money. But yeah, go ahead. What happened on May 1st with Rob Ford?
So the Cliff Notes version is there's three different stories released around the same time about Rob Ford. The worst being more crack videos. In recent ones, this was allegedly from last week. And this was in his sister's basement that he was smoking the crack with. I don't know if she was there, but it was at her house, her basement, and she has a history of substance problems. So,
it's a good bet.
Yeah, good bet. She was around. What I want to know is who was filming the video. Why would you film this? Who's trying to set this man up in his family that they would?
Yes. I mean, the first time it was like the gangbangers, right?
It was the dealers or whoever. But
you're at your sister's house. You're supposedly among fellow friends and crackheads.
Yeah.
Maybe his sister tried to set him up.
That'd be something.
That'd be a great twist for the Rob Ford movie.
Yeah.
But that makes no sense though, because if you're Rob Ford's sister, you've got somebody in the government at least for the next couple months. Like that's got to be a cake right there. You can pretty much do whatever you want,
and you probably got free crack out of it.
Yeah, every time the police do a big drug bust, she's happy because it's like Christmas.
But yeah, Rob Ford is going to rehab for an alcohol problem, not for a crack problem, an alcohol problem.
Rob Ford. So he's back on crack after he told us he only smoked crack that one time when he was drinking.
Yeah.
which in hindsight, that's like the worst excuse ever. Because I know people that only smoke cigarettes when they drink, or I know people that only eat late when they drink, but I've never known anybody that had a few too many and was like, I want to smoke crack. Like, drinking is not a gateway drug to crack.
No. Several steps away from...
You got to do some stuff in between to get to crack.
Yeah.
So he's got... They caught him with crack. What else happened?
He was trashing one of the candidates running for mayor.
Was there any racial epithets used?
I believe so. I know there's a...
Because you know we got to keep the theme going this week.
Let's see... If there was...
It had to be. I mean, we already heard him make racist statements toward that cab driver that one time.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's no stranger to using derogatory comments towards...
Yeah, homophobic comments.
Yeah.
Let's see here. All right, reading the text here. I don't see any racial.
Okay, that's a step forward. So he just called her like a bitch or something?
Yeah.
Okay, hey, that's a step forward for Rob Ford.
And then there's the Justin Bieber incident.
Oh, yes, this is my favorite part.
Where Bieber, being the smartass that he is, ran into Rob Ford.
Set the scene, Marcus, because this is Toronto. For all of our Canadian listeners, this is what the rest of the world thinks about when they think of Toronto specifically and, by extension, Canada.
The only thing missing was Drake here, but...
Yeah, Drake breaking up the fight.
Yeah, Bieber and Ford were at a club together in March, and Rob Ford went over to introduce himself, and Bieber said, "Did you bring any crack to smoke?" And he didn't take it too well. He sort of walked off and went.
I gotta give Bieber credit on that one. Like, as much as we rag on Bieber, and rightfully so, that's pretty funny.
But he's one to talk. Bieber's been accused of doing his own drug
use. Yeah, Rob Ford should have came back and said, "You got any Molly on you?"
Yeah.
Like, they should have just had a big... I don't know why they was beefing, but they should have just had a big laugh. Because, ironically, and I was thinking about this the other day when I was reading the story, that's probably... You got the soon-to-be former mayor of Toronto, and probably in 15 years, the mayor of Toronto in Justin Bieber, because that's about all he's going to be able to do.
He can't win them. And Toronto hates him, too. No one likes this kid.
In 20 years, Justin Bieber will have a gut... That'd be balding, and everybody be like, "Oh, remember when he had them songs? Let's vote for Bieber. Maybe Usher can run his campaign after he gets through coaching Anderson Silva on his comeback."
Anderson, sweep the lead.
But yeah, so that is just like, in what world? I guess we know what world. In Toronto in 2014, you have the disgraced, cracked out, racist, homophobic, drunken mayor of Toronto and their least favorite son meeting up in a nightclub. Is Bieber 21?
Let me see.
I don't know why, like, that just popped in my head. Like, all of a sudden I'm worried about Justin Bieber's
20.
He shouldn't even been in a nightclub.
He just turned 20. Yeah.
Yeah, he shouldn't even been in the club. So the mayor and Justin Bieber in the club. Bieber smarts off to him like the smart mouth kid he is. And Rob Ford. So they didn't make physical contact.
No, they did not. No.
Okay, but you, yeah, I'm sure Rob Ford like tried to bow up to him though.
Nah, he since he went to the bathroom, he got his feelings hurt.
He's like, the only thing that can pick me up right now is crack. And cut to Rob Ford in a bathroom stall with some crack on the back of the seat. Take these broken wings. We're writing the Rob Ford movie right here. Justin Bieber can play himself. Yeah, Drake would have made that the greatest night ever.
Yeah.
That would have been brilliant.
I do hope he gets the help that he needs, because he's clearly...
He did check himself into rehab, but he didn't, correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't drop out of the mayoral race.
Of course not. He didn't still win it.
Yeah, he's not going to win it.
I think he had a decent shot before this week.
Before the second crack picture came out.
Yeah. Because like they're Canadians. They're nice people. They're forgiving.
Yeah, that's how crazy it is. You had a first crack picture and a first racist statement and a first off-color statement towards a woman, and you still could have got reelected.
Well, it's Marion Barry all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around forever now.
Marion Barry was smart enough to just have that first incident and then keep his crack under wraps. Like, hey, nobody, Marion, just stop smoking on camera. Because the bitch set me up. Classic line.
Yeah. So, did well soon, Rob.
Yeah. But yeah, that, I don't know. Like, where do you see this guy? Because I don't see him getting reelected. And I know our friends John and Way up at the Fight Network, John was especially worried about his health. I have a feeling like we saw with Joe Paterno, and I think we may see with Donald Sterling, not wishing harm on anybody, but when you've got people that are so consumed by one thing, and then that one thing is taken away, and they're not in the best of health anyway, sometimes you see them kind of give up the ghost.
Nah, reality show.
For Rob Ford?
Yep.
Didn't he try that already, and it didn't work? Like, didn't he, like...
An American reality show, we'll take anyone on. Canada,
oh, no.
Canada has standards and shit.
I got it. Next year, VH1, Celebrity Rehab.
They stopped that show.
They stopped it?
Yeah. Everyone's dropping dead on that show.
They are. But I was going to say, you can have Rob Ford, Otis Nixon, Lamar Odom, all-star cast.
I see American reality show.
Oh, the Rob Ford Project.
DDP should take him in.
Oh, yeah, DDP. And have Rob Ford doing DDP yoga.
Yeah. Crazy things have happened.
Have like a sit-down, like confessional with Rob Ford and Justin Bieber making amends.
By the way, when he ran for mayor originally, dude got arrested for a DUI and for marijuana. So, Toronto, you brought this on yourselves. You knew what you're getting into.
Well, they were like, drugs and weed we can handle. We're cool with that.
Yeah, but still. I mean, first impressions. You're putting yourself out there.
Oh, Rob Ford. Yeah. So, if you're a betting man, would you bet that this is the last we hear of Rob Ford until... when's the election? In October? Let's say, is this the last we hear of Rob Ford before the end of the summer? So before September?
No.
No. And is it going to be more bad news?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any other kind?
No, not at this point.
Yeah, I'd like to believe that he could keep quiet and actually get some help, but I actually don't think he'll be able to get any help unless he's not the mayor anymore. I think that's what it will actually take for him to look in the mirror and get his shit together.
Yeah, I think so. And hopefully that's in the fall.
Like you said, if he somehow finds a way to retain this seat, he's not going to change. Like, why would he? Why would you change?
No need to.
If you can smoke crack and say racist and stupid stuff and get drunk and fight teen idols.
And go to the Raptors games.
Go to Raptors games, yeah. Why would you change? So, yeah, Toronto, if you care about this man's health and well-being, don't vote for him. But if you care about entertaining headlines, do vote for him. The choice is yours.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I think that's going to do it for this week, Marcus. We had a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
whole lot. I'm hoping for a quieter week next week. NFL draft next week.
Yeah, NFL draft next week. More NBA playoff talk, NHL playoff talk. Maybe there'll be another chapter in the Sterling stuff, depending on if we get any news on a sale, or maybe we'll get an announcement on the Lakers head coach.
Or he could be dead. I mean,
he could be dead.
We didn't touch that because this part's being recorded a day later, but he reportedly has cancer. So,
yeah. So I mean, yeah, he could be dead, but we wish the best for Donald Sterling, just not around any involvement with the NBA.
I wish nothing for the man.
I'm just saying, in case there's any legal ramifications, Brother Mark. Call covering my ass.
Yeah.
But, so we'll have that to talk about. Maybe a new coach in L.A. Maybe will the Steve Kerr era begin?
Nope.
Steve Kerr, all of a sudden, the hottest coaching prospect in the world right now. And nobody seems to know why.
Yeah, I don't get it. Don't get it at all.
But, so we'll talk about that. We'll have the fallout from Extreme Rules.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yep, fallout from Extreme Rules next week. We'll have to definitely have some TNA talk next week. Because I think next week is the beginning of MVP and the Blacklist.
Negrolution, it does. It begins next week.
Negrolution. I was going to go with the NWO, the Negro World Order. Either one works. I do like Negrolution. This is why we can't have nice things, Marcus. This is why we can't host national TV shows.
Yeah, we're not worthy.
No. Man, we'll have an update on that, too, if I get on the air with Mad Dog. Give him a piece of my mind. So that'll be it. Big Nasty, again, wasn't able to make it, but at least he was there for the first segment. Hopefully we'll all three of us will be able to record next week. Give some quick shout-outs. Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com is where you can find this show as well as many others. Talking about a lot of things in the world of sports, pop culture, pro wrestling. I got my weekly Impact column. The one for this week should be up Sunday. And I'll have this past week's Impact as well as my thoughts on the Sacrifice pay-per-view. So that's at placetobenation.com. Check out podcastland.com. Vote for us for podcast of the month at podcastland.com. Big up to our friend Alfredo Torres at Torres vs. Zombies.
He's no friend of mine.
Yeah, he's not. I was going to say he's no friend of Marcus's. He did say he would have a beer summit with you, though.
Okay.
So we can make things happen and bring peace in the realm of podcasts. But he won the podcast of the month for
May, I believe.
May, or, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for April.
For April, I'm sorry. May just started. Yeah.
He won for April because Jamie won for March. So Mr. Throwback Thursday won in March. Torres versus Zombies won in April. So let's see if we can get the Kings of Sport a victory here in May. Again, podcastland.com for that. And I'm trying to think of anything else before we go to our personal pitches, personal plugs. I think that's it. So, Marcus, where can the people find you, follow your work, and check out your Instagram, where you may or may not have pictures of black people on them.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark DeWill, MarcoWill.
You can follow Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa at This Is Nasty on Twitter. Also, check him out at Bleacher Report. Read the articles. Check out the videos. Leave him plenty of feedback, whether it is love or hate. Either way, it doesn't matter to
we
Big Nasty.
We prefer hate.
Yeah, we prefer hate. Because the more you hate on him, the more entertaining he is on this show. You can follow me at N8, N-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic, on Twitter.com. Check out the Facebook page, Kings of Sport, Facebook.com/Kings of Sport. I want to get a new drive started since we're in a new month in April. I think right now we're at, what, 350?
Around there, yeah.
Around 350. Let's see if we can get to 500 by the end of the month. That's a goal. If we can get to 500 by the end of the month, maybe we'll do something special. Maybe we won't, but maybe we will. So, but you won't find out unless we get to 500.
There you go.
That means you got to share the page with your friends, share the show. If you like what we're doing, I'm sure your friends are going to like it too. So let them know that there are some black guys doing podcasts that are worthy of being on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out all of us at Cospod, KOS_POD on Twitter. I think that's it. We don't have a sponsor right now, but we'll be working on that in the weeks to come because we definitely want to get some, what's the word, capital flowing into this project because the more that comes in, the more we can put out. Maybe we can come up with some t-shirts or something.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, we'll figure some hoodies. We'll come up with a white hoodie for Donald Sterling. Boom. Yes! I was just looking for a way to end it.
There you go. I was
looking for my out. So that's going to do it for this week. We'll catch you guys back here next week. Same time, same channel. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. DADDY, facts.